You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey there, before we start this episode, we are doing a deep dive deep into the 2016 election, giving you a full recap, and I just want to talk to you a little bit while Greg and Tad Western sit here and scroll 8chan for Trump memes.
They're awesome.
Finding anything good?
Oh, I'm finding epic memes.
I just want to take a moment to thank you for listening to this election season. You know, we have for 4 years been thinking about this election cycle and how important this would be to growing We Are Libertarians, and it has exceeded our expectations, and we want to thank you guys for listening, thank you for sharing, and thank you for donating. If you found value in what we have done, we don't ask anything. We give away our stuff for free. We're working on giving some gifts to the people that pay, but the election has kind of taken over, and I've been procrastinating, but we will do that soon. We just want to say, if you find value in what we do and you've learned something and you've been able to out-argue your friends on Facebook, if you felt like you're a more informed voter, if you felt like...
Told them that Trump was going to win.
You heard here that Trump was going to win.
Dropping knowledge bombs.
Right. A year ago, we sat at this table and these two said that Trump would win, and I said, that'll never happen, and boy, did it happen. You heard about ISIS here first. We bring you information that you're not going to get anywhere else. So we ask that you go to wearelibertarians.com and sign up to be a per-episode pledger through Patreon, or you can donate monthly through PayPal, or just give us a one-time tip. We use this money to then put it back into advertising the show, buying services like SoundCloud, our hosting services, various services to help market and advertise, and that's what we put the money towards. We use it to grow the show, and it helps me offset the cost of running We Are Libertarians, which, you know, our bandwidth is off the charts and it gets expensive. So I want to take a moment to thank the people that do donate. We haven't done this in a few episodes, and I just want to thank everybody that does do that. I want to thank Todd, Joe. I don't know if people want me to say their last names, and I also know that I can't say their last names because I will always mess it up.
They're going back.
But I do want to say Andre Myrick, Richard, Joshua Sexton, Ryan Graham, Toldy Stoltzfus, sorry, Toby, Melissa Hawk, Chris, and Joe Benavides, and Todd Singer, thank you so much for donating through Patreon. And every time we put out an episode, we get paid, so it gives us incentive to give you more content. On the recurring side, I want to thank Brian Wolgamuth, Alex Ramon, Nick Economopoulos, Zachary Felker, Jason Doolittle, Christopher Lane, Dennis Minington, Jeremiah Morrill of the Jeremiah Morrill Pizza Society. He gives us $7 a month. I never give him $7 for pizza. Charles Rodine, Christopher Lane, Sarah Potter, Sam Naimi, Aaron Jones, Mark English. You guys are awesome. You guys help offset the cost of what we do here. And thank you so much to anybody that has donated to We Are Libertarians recently and helping us grow and continue. We appreciate it so much. And without further ado, no more commercials. All right, maybe one more commercial for our friends at Lions of Liberty, Lava Flow, and the Johnny Rocket Launchpad. But after that, after 1 minute from now, you're going to hear the recap of the 2016 election special.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty, rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at LionsOfLiberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians. Well, I can't believe it. And so I invited Tyler here, and then as always to my right, especially today.
Oh yeah,
we have Mr. Gregory Lenz.
I'm feeling great again. Are you? Who else is feeling great again?
Greg on the right.
I'm wearing the hat. I told you I have to wear the hat. Across from you is Tyler Weiss.
Thanks for having me,
Weiss,
dear leader.
You're wearing what?
These are my hater blockers.
I can't see anybody. Get a picture of those.
I can't see anybody.
Hater shades.
It's been over a year. I think me and Greg sat in these exact seats. And,
yeah.
Trump will not run for president. Trump will not win the Republican nomination. Trump will never get above 15%.
Trust me, I watched tons and tons of his rallies, and I was like,
right.
Just the energy and the outturn that he had. I was like, there's no way he's not going to win.
Oh, the enthusiasm gap was incredible.
Absolutely.
Like, she couldn't get 75 with rally temps, like, showing up, and he was getting 10,000 in a hangar in Minnesota.
And his work ethic, I mean, he literally land a plane, go out,
make the town great again.
With high energy, and then off to the next stop.
He's so high energy.
For 70 years old, that's not joking. That's really awesome.
It's crazy.
None of us could do that.
I couldn't do that, and I'm 33.
Right.
And like the fact that he's done it at 70 is awesome.
All right.
Hillary has literally killed herself just trying to even do a couple 75 person rallies.
So here's a recap. I'm sure all of you are aware at this point that Donald Trump will be your next president. It was called about 2:30 last night. I was like everybody else, wrong the entire time. I yesterday thought, you know, Hillary, I was 50-50 at about 10 a.m. yesterday. And I thought, I think Hillary's got it. That means Trump's going to be president because I have been wrong about every single thing. And then about 3:30, 4 o'clock.
It's because you're establishment.
It is. And
Abdul ruined you.
Well, no, I have experience in political science, and that's my problem. There are certain laws like gravity or physics or political science that
laws.
Yeah.
Before the emails came out.
Right. But. And so about 4:30, I think it was, CNN put out their exit polling, and it was 68% were motivated by change, and I was like, oh, it's going to be great again. But I'm sitting there at like 6 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock, 7:30, numbers are starting to kind of roll in, and man, I'm just sitting there going, he's got to run the table. He's got to win 6 swing states. She's got to win one. He's got to win 6 swing states and a blue state to get this. That's such a tall order. I just don't know how he can do that.
For a lesser man.
Especially when you're looking at the numbers, you know, you're going, all right, I know they're in Michigan, so it has to be in play. But Trump, even the team Trump, it's been reported now that they didn't think they were going to win the past couple
Polling's
weeks.
Polling's basically worthless.
Yeah, especially in this election cycle.
Right. And polling internally in the campaigns, in the two campaigns, and public polling, all was completely wrong. There was
one group named Trafalgar that I had read about, and they staked their entire credibility on this election, and they nailed it.
Yep.
In the LA Times poll now, 2 years, 2012 and 2016, they've nailed it. So that's the new gold standard.
So when I was looking yesterday morning at the exits, I was looking at Trafalgar Group because they had a high sample. Most were polling 400 to 500 people. They had an error margin of 4 to 6%. But then Trafalgar did 1,200 people. They had an error margin of the lower the margin. If you're at like 500 people and up at 4 or 5% of an error margin, they're guessing.
Yeah.
They're mm-hmm. guessing, and it's not worth anything. But,
and think of the people who answer those calls.
Sure.
And absolutely. They're the same people that call in about infomercials during the day.
Right. So, yeah. I was looking at it going, it's going to come down to Michigan. Because at this point, looking at the trends and looking at the momentum, he's got Florida, he's got Georgia, he's got North Carolina, he's got Ohio. So now it's going to come down to New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. And he ended up carrying Pennsylvania. He ended up carrying Michigan. And
Wisconsin was the...
But Wisconsin was the biggest shocker. Yeah. I don't think anybody saw Wisconsin.
No, because you know their rural population just traditionally hasn't turned out, and it's always been overwhelmed by Milwaukee and Madison.
So if you... this 100% reporting, polls closed... It is Donald Trump at 47.9% with 1.4 million votes. Her at 1.3 with 46. Gary Johnson at 3.6. Jill at 1.1. Derek Castle with 0.4. And somebody named Moorhead with 1,700 votes.
That was me. I wrote in.
You did? Okay. It was incredibly close in Minnesota, too.
I know.
It was 46.8. which she had 1.364. He had 1.32 at 45%. Again, Gary at 3.9. In New Hampshire, it was incredibly close. It was 47.5 to 47.3, a difference of about 1,000 votes in New Hampshire. It has still not been certified. And in Michigan, Donald Trump with 47.6 to Hillary's 47.3, a difference of, it looks like, about 10,000 votes there. So, and in Pennsylvania, he smacked her based on those numbers, 2.9 million to her 2.8 million, yep. 48 to 47. Let's take a look at Florida. Let's move down to the Sunshine State where there's the Atlantic is coming in. So 49.
Broward County.
49.1 to 47.8. Let's see. Any other? Arizona's not certified. 49.6 for Trump. Hillary at 45. Nevada was a 2-point advantage for Hillary Clinton. That was a swing state. Colorado was in play at one point as 46 to 44. We're in Indiana, and that was 57 to 37.
They shouldn't even have an election really for the presidential nomination.
If you go and you look in some of the counties here in Indiana, and obviously what is called the Rust Belt. You have Minnesota, and Iowa, sort of, into Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky. You've got a lot of auto industry there, and that's really where what carried the day for him. Georgia was in play at one point. They thought it was 51-45.
You know what? Something I never really followed up why that was so competitive. Was there a local issue that Trump did a misstep on, like Hillary did in Pennsylvania with Cole?
It was just bad polling. Okay. North Carolina was also a swing state. He won by 4 there. Virginia, he was carrying Virginia for most of the night, and it looked like it was going to go to Donald Trump, but he ended up with 200,000 less votes, 49.9 to 45.
Virginia's a blue state from now on.
Yeah.
It is.
So what you really see when you look at Iowa, he was 51 to 42. But when you really start to look around, you know, in these swing states, they weren't over 50 by any stretch of the imagination. Nevada, this is interesting. Oh, so Nevada has NOTA on the ballot. None of the above.
Mm-hmm. How many states do just them in Hawaii?
I don't know. Hawaii.
I thought it was three.
Hawaii does not have NOTA.
Oh,
maybe it's only them then.
Some of the Western. I'll kind of look around and see
those hippie states.
But
it's actually kind of a cool option.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the numbers in Nevada, I think this is kind of an interesting statistic. Nevada wins this. Hillary wins the state with 537,000 to 511 for Trump. Gary at 37,000 with 3.3. None of the above with 2.6 at 28,000. Gary beat NOTA by 10,000 votes. Taking a look at Utah.
It's better than losing to NOTA.
Yeah, that is true. Gary in Utah, that was part of their Western strategy, spent a lot of time there. He won the state. Trump won the state by 46.8. Hillary with 27.8. Evan McMullen, or as I call him, Egg McMuffin, with 20.4% of the vote. Gary at 3.2. Gary, pretty much across the board, 3%, except in New Mexico, his home state, 48% for Hillary Clinton, 40% for Trump. Gary at 9.3, so 380,000 to 315,000 to 73,000.
I couldn't believe there's a Santa Fe Reporter news story, and it said, our own Gary Johnson surprisingly is running on the Libertarian ticket. And I thought,
how can you not know that?
Like, I guess maybe he didn't spend time there because, you know, he figured they'd just immediately.
Name recognition?
The one that made your state great again?
Right. So three states still have not been called. Arizona, Michigan, and New Hampshire. New Hampshire and Michigan too close to call. Arizona is not too close to call, but they still have a lot of mail-in ballots still. So there's still a chance that that could switch. But they only have 11 electoral votes. And so that wouldn't make a difference because Donald Trump is winning the Electoral College at 279 to 228. Did she win the popular vote?
Yeah,
she's up. She's up in the popular.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how much.
I got it right here.
About
200,000.
By about 200,000. That would make six out of the last seven presidential elections that the Democrats have won the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Bush won the
Electoral College,
and obviously Donald Trump will win the Electoral College. Vox had one of the most scathing articles you can possibly imagine against the Electoral College. And it's so funny
time
to see,
do away with it.
It's so funny to see so many of these liberal bastards turn into limited government people now that they're not in charge.
Flaw of progressivism.
Yep.
Create a big old monster and hand the keys over to Trump.
So let's take a look at the Senate real quick. Just a brief overview. It was 50-50 as yesterday whether or not the Republicans would win. The Republicans ended up keeping the Senate. It is now 51 to 46. One is not yet called. I don't have that. There's two independents, 51 Republicans, 46 Democrats. Those two independents caucus with the Democrats. The one that has not been called yet is Louisiana. That was a runoff, and it will be between Kennedy and Campbell. Kennedy the Republican, Campbell the Democrat.
I feel like they always have a runoff.
Yeah, they do. That's how their system is set up.
Damn Napoleonic code.
Yeah, that will take place in December, I think December 10th, but that is expected to go Republican, so your Senate will be 52-46 plus 2, so 48. The Republicans gain the House. They maintained the House pretty early, about 8 o'clock last night. The House was officially given back to the Republicans. That is 238 for the Republicans, 193 for the Democrats, and four have not yet been called. Two of those are in Louisiana, and it doesn't look like any of the ones that haven't been called it's probably Louisiana bullshit.
Do you remember how much commotion was made about how he's screwing everybody down ballot?
That was a huge ordeal with the Never Trump movement and everything else.
Are you telling me that the largest, you know, one of the largest voting bases is the non-college white males, and he appeals to them in a way no one in your party ever, no nominee has since Reagan?
Right.
And you think that isn't going to have a positive effect?
Yeah.
Are you just stupid?
Yeah. In the governor's races, Washington and Oregon went Democrat, as well as West Virginia. And Delaware obviously went for the Democrats. For the Republicans, so that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for the Democrats. North Carolina looks like it's going to go Democrat. So that is 6 to Utah, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, Vermont, and New Hampshire going for the Republicans. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for the Republicans. I didn't see where Gary ended up in terms of they're still counting and tabulating all of it. So we can't give you an exact percentage of where Gary ended up, but it's over 3%.
I think it was 3.8.
Yeah.
Oh, is it that high?
I think it was. Well, when I was looking.
And so Gary getting over 3% in his race gives ballot access to several states. I don't have those pulled up in front of me, but...
it's over 4 million votes.
Yeah, so obviously a huge jump in terms of the amount of people that voted for Gary Johnson this time. A pretty big shift, and definitely the largest number in American history. Still disappointing that he didn't get that 5%, because that would have given many more states more ballot access. But c'est la vie, fuck you, Bill Weld.
do you think that really had an effect?
No.
I don't either.
I don't. I'll tell you what. I think... So we're going to kind of break this down into Trump, Clinton, Obama, the GOP, the DNC. We'll talk about Gary first, because I think Gary is the smallest of these stories. In terms of where Gary ended up, that's about where it probably should have been, to be honest, because the presidential race was so close. And it was so fear-driven that people were going to flee home. You know, all my family that said that they were going to vote for Gary Johnson ended up going back to the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
My grandparents have voted in every election since they've been adults. They're nearly 80. Diehard Republicans. My love of politics comes from my grandmother, who, you know, still has pictures of Reagan and Bush up in the house. They're in Florida, and they didn't go vote because they were just disgusted by both the Republican and Democratic candidate, and they weren't motivated enough to go vote for Gary Johnson as they said they might. So that settling period, and I will tell you from my own perspective, excuse me, you know, nobody has been more anti-Trump than I've been. Much to the chagrin of my co-host at certain points.
Oh, I never was down on you for being anti-Trump. I just didn't, in this election, and it wasn't you, it was libertarians in general. I thought that was, you're bashing the wrong person. This is an outsider's election. Yep. You know, yeah, you want to bash crooked Hillary, not, you know, quasi-endorser.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what it came down to, too, on people who were going to vote for Johnson or whoever they're going to vote for. You're not going to, if you think that Hillary might win your state, you're not going to throw a vote to Johnson.
You're not going to take the lesser insider.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And by, you know, if you're liberal-leaning, or even if you just are a Republican that can't stand her, or a libertarian that is afraid of Trump, you're going to, if you're in a swing state, you're going to vote for, you're going to take a pragmatic vote, let's say.
And a lot of Republicans thought Johnson Weld ticket was too liberal anyway.
Right. And that is a mistake. But... For me, I voted for Gary Johnson proudly, and I've supported Gary Johnson, and I'm not as down on his run. I still would have voted for Bill Weld, because I think that's, you know, I'm not playing hindsight here, because that's not how the world works.
He's still a better option than Trump or Hillary.
Absolutely,
I think the ticket was actually. I mean, if you're looking at experience and leadership.
Yeah,
obviously it's a better ticket.
Yeah, Gary Johnson was, as soon as he started pulling from Hillary in these polls, the leftist blogs went after him, and
absolutely,
it worked. And so he's considered a dumb person, and he's not a dumb person. And he never got
out in front of it.
It's unfair, but guess what? That's politics. Yep. It's not fair. And you build systems that overcome it. And like Donald Trump did. You know what? Guess what? The attacks on him, I'm sure he feels, weren't fair. You know, even though they just took his words and repeated them. But
that's the brilliance. He attacked himself before you can attack him. It's
right.
It's like the rap battle with Eminem and 8 Mile.
Yeah, he called out the media before he even got so deep they could dig out the shit on him and throw it out. Yeah. He was like, oh, the crooked media, they're out to get me.
I may not
and
accept the results.
Yeah.
Sure.
That was brilliant.
I may not put
all the focus on a rigged, you know,
absolutely,
voting.
And you know what? All these liberal losers are protesting right now in New York City, Oakland.
Everywhere.
You know, oh, we don't accept the results. Anyway, so Gary,
I thought there wasn't voter fraud.
So getting to 3% in a presidential race, you know, getting 2 more million votes is pretty good. But, you know, I've been so anti-Trump, but these last, I have to admit, the WikiLeaks and the FBI investigation really pushed me from Trump is the more evil of the two to Hillary is by far the more evil of the two.
Absolutely.
And a lot of things have come into focus for me this last month. Things that Greg has been saying, it started to really materialize for me. And when you see the WikiLeaks and you read about Some of it's conspiracy stuff, like I'm the spirit cooking stuff, the, you know.
That's just fun. That's the cherry right. on top. Like, she's a, right. she's a felon. It doesn't matter. She may be a cannibal Satan worshiper. You just don't know.
You don't know, but it's still hurt her.
I'm not saying it. Many people are saying yeah. she might be
Other
a cannibal.
Other people tell me it all the time.
But
bad people.
You know, when but
bad hombres.
The foundation stuff has been completely verified.
And that's where the focus should be at.
Yeah.
But you couldn't, man. Once it was satanic occult and pedophilia, it
trumped
like,
everything.
Well, let's not even worry about that she might have committed treason and violated the Logan Act.
If this comes out, this is huge.
Yeah, the FBI was even like, listen, we don't care that she might have literally undermined the United States government yeah. as Secretary of State. We got to find out about pedophilia.
We're talking about international child trafficking.
Pizza parties.
Yeah.
What was the
That shit got deep real quick.
Yeah. It's still going.
The CEO of the foundation.
Blackwater. Oh, Eric Braverman mm-hmm. resigned in May of last year, 2015. He had done an internal audit because they had been catching flack, and right now they're under watch by a charity watchdog organization because they had no systems in place to account for where $1 million birthday gifts from Qatar were being held and what accounts. And there was intermingling of Bill's legal fees for the foundation being paid yeah. for by Hillary's campaign. Chelsea was on the dole and paying for a wedding through
her
foundation
wedding, yeah.
dollars. I mean, all
of this had been alleged, but there was no way
once this guy did. He's a McKinsey consultant, yeah. and McKinsey is a management consulting firm, and it's the gold standard. Like that,
right.
and then Bain, where Mitt Romney was from, are the gold standards of management consulting. And so he had done some consulting work for the foundation. They brought him in to make him CEO. He did an internal audit to put in place best practices to get them out of the spotlight and get them in accordance with the law so they wouldn't get caught by this charity watchdog organization. All of a sudden, Chelsea comes and starts playing a major role at the foundation. It comes down to him and then a guy named Doug Brand, who's still with the organization.
Doug Band
fought it out. And so after he basically looked at it and said, this is just wrong, mm-hmm. he resigns immediately. And to this day, no one knows where he is. He hasn't been on social media. He hasn't responded to any interviews or any inquiries. He was scheduled to teach a class at Yale last fall and just no-showed.
Oh, wow.
And they canceled the class.
He voted Democrat, though.
Yeah, he did vote Democrat.
Of course.
But, so he is completely MIA, and the only lead from Sean Hannity is that he decided, I know, but I mean,
investigative reporter Sean Hannity.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, in the complete absence of information, you'll go anywhere, you know? And so he was told that he sought political asylum with the Russian embassy in New York City. And then all the conspiracy theorists came out of the woodwork because there was a dead body that was just found at the Russian embassy about a week ago.
Uh-oh.
through blunt trauma to the head.
That was how he may have been working out and dropped him.
But I mean, it's odd for someone to be the Absolutely. CEO of the Clinton Global Initiative, a high society job that you could leverage into basically a political career. You could be a hedge fund master of the universe. You could do virtually anything you wanted to. And for him to disappear and drop off the map, and for him not have a job anywhere where it's on his LinkedIn profile, for nothing to be updated, is really odd. Because I was telling Chris, it'd be like Mitch Daniels, who was the former governor of Indiana here. He's now the president of Purdue University. And
right.
that's a similar type job. You know, you don't make a ton of money, but it's so high profile mm-hmm. and you're in charge of so many resources. You usually leverage that to go into something where you just make a killing.
Yeah.
And so it'd be like the equivalent of Mitch Daniels or the president of Indiana University just resigning suddenly and no one knowing where you went.
Right.
And that's not like, you can feel free to Google it if you want. You will not be able to track down Eric Braverman on any social media account
right.
or any news source. I spent the night trying to do it to find anything.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah. So the mystery continues, and it'll be interesting to see if and who and what happens to the Clinton Foundation, the investigations.
Well, that investigation is still open by the FBI as well.
Well, so he's right. the one that in the emails from Podesta, a lady named Tavern from NBC or a reporter, she asked who the mole was, and then he says it was him, and she goes, wow, and then that's the end of the email correspondence. Huh? And so Podesta knew
that it was Braverman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy,
he knew that was the leak, and he leaked to NBC. Follow the money is all I'll tell you.
Wow.
And that was the last
and did
communication he had.
Did they?
That's how we got to where we are with the Cotard $1 million donation.
Okay. Interesting.
Because that was a birthday gift to Bill Clinton of $1 million to his foundation.
Right.
While they were simultaneously funding ISIS, which we knew through the National Security Agency and the CIA.
Yeah.
We had tied the dollars to the King of Qatar. And so we knew that they were simultaneously funding the Clintons as well as funding ISIS.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. Let's take a break. And by a break, I mean I want to tell you about the Chris Spangle Show. It is a podcast that you can go and download right now. And we just did an interview with Heather Black. She is in Russia. She is a Hoosier and a Wall listener who lives in Moscow, actually. And she and I did a quick 45-minute interview today about the 2016 election, what it's like to live in Russia, what they're talking about, the effects of the sanctions, and it's just a really interesting point of view to hear somebody who's been in Russia for 7 months watching our election through their media. So go and check that out. Let's break this into sections. Let's talk about Trump.
Do you want to finish Gary so he met expectations for you?
I mean, my expectation is that he'll win, but if I'm looking at it and I go, listen, let's take the victories we can get. Tripling his percentage is pretty good and got a ton of media. And there's going to be so many people in 5 years, it's going to be so tremendous, that will come to Libertarian Party meetings and say, yeah, the first time I heard about a libertarian was through Gary Johnson in 2016.
When are we raising taxes?
Right. So
Hillary.
Yeah.
She's great. Vote for her.
So did he? Am I disappointed he didn't win? Yeah, but I really never expected him to win.
Yeah, just, you know, were your personal expectations or did he meet those?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you go back and you listen to those media interviews, those are really good. And I consider Libertarian Party top of the ticket races to be marketing opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think that he marketed the Libertarian message well. Not great, but well enough that if I were a noob and I were sitting out there looking at my choices, I would be intrigued enough to look further into the party, and I might have learned a different point of view. And he gave a lot of people like my family, he had the credentials and enough to get them to look at him. So ultimately, the race was so close that people went back home. And it's whatever. So I just don't think that our wins, our victories are going to come from these top of ticket races.
But he's going to come. Like, he did a good job and he's got the momentum going to where it's going to be, we'll be able to leverage it going forward and expand.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's given ballot access to hundreds of new candidates. Yep. So
that he hasn't met.
That he hasn't met and that we don't know yet. Yeah. So you can be one of those candidates. And, you know, I got into an argument with a guy who was just like, I just think they need to select better candidates. I was like, dude, you're a Libertarian Party person. You're one of them. So go get involved. Like, I'm an establishment member of the Libertarian Party. I have regular conversations with the national chair. Is it because I'm special? No, it's just because I keep showing up and they can't get rid of me.
And we enjoy making fun of Brett Bittner together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a little Brett.
So it's just a matter of showing up. That's it. So show up. So on to Donald Trump. We'll talk Trump, Clinton, Obama, the GOP, and the DNC. And we can combine these if we want. But I think we've got to start with a winner. We've got to start with the God Emperor. It was completely shocking, especially that he won Wisconsin. But as I sat and really thought about it last night, I wasn't all that surprised. And I wrote an article that was actually pretty well received on Facebook, and it's called Why Trump Won. It's up at WeAreLibertarians.com. And, you know, I hadn't really thought about this until last night, until I saw the massive amount of returns and anger. And it reminded me of 2010 when I went up to Peru, Indiana, which is up 31, and if you go from Kokomo up to Peru to South Bend, you've got this corridor in the central part of the northern part of the state. And what that does is it takes you up to Detroit eventually, and that route was essentially the birth of the auto industry from Indianapolis to Detroit. And so you've got that triangle of, you know, Columbus to
to Detroit, Columbus, Ohio, up to Detroit, to Indianapolis, and there's in within that area a lot of auto industry. And from the 1980s into starting in the 90s, really, into the 2000s, you saw a tremendous amount of jobs being lost in that area. And
600,000?
Something like 600,000 to 800,000 Hoosiers were affected by those job losses over those 20 years here in a state of 6 million people. And it reminded me of the first time that I really... we grew up in Plainfield, Greg and I. And that's an upwardly mobile town. Mm-hmm. It is a town that is a suburb of Indianapolis, a small hamlet. When we were kids, there was one restaurant called The Coachman, and now there's a mall, and there's 100 restaurants, and, you know, a ton
perfect
of warehouses.
Example of the development of urban spread.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it was upwardly mobile. So we just didn't grow up in a town like Kokomo or Anderson or Muncie or Madison. Or not Madison,
labor union
Madison
towns.
County. Yeah, labor union towns. And Peru, Indiana is one of those. And I'm sitting in a Harvey Hinkelmeyer's, and I'm sitting around a table with five libertarians forming a county party in that county. And the guy spent the evening, he was an older guy, former auto worker, former UAW member, and he was I think he was the secretary of the county libertarian party that we were forming there. And he told me all about, you know, Peru. And he told me about Kokomo and Anderson and all these towns. And he explained to me that these were major towns. A town like Anderson, Indiana, for instance, in the east central part of Indiana, you had two high schools. The largest basketball arena in the nation, the Wigwam, is in Anderson. Mm-hmm. And it just closed down. And now they've consolidated.
Elizabeth Warren would be pissed.
So mad. Yeah. So mad. She'd be honored, actually, to sit in the Wigwam.
Pocahontas. And
so you have these towns that had... They were communities. They were wealthy communities because it was good-paying, middle-class jobs. And they worked in the auto industry. And this particular guy made something like seat belts or, you know, dashboards out of plastics or whatever.
Yeah, industrial clusters popped up around the auto industry.
And he said, you know, over the course of 20 years, we've seen our communities obliterated. We've seen... You know, our friends move away to places where there are jobs. We've seen people move away, and that's left, you know, the kids don't come back to town. They move and they stay in Indianapolis, or they move to a bigger city.
The tax base starts dwindling, then Absolutely. The schools get worse, and then there are cuts, and it's like a vicious downward spiral.
You know, and so it's... And I want to play a clip from Michael Moore, because... I hate that I agree with Michael Moore, but I do. It's
he voted for Jill Stein, in case you were wondering.
Did he? Of course he did.
No, you did.
Oh, I did not vote for Jill Stein, no.
Well, but there was a million people who did.
But I think that he kind of makes this point eloquently, and I've seen a lot of libertarians sharing this today. And it's about a four-minute clip, but I think it's really poignant because Michael Moore is one of the only honest Democrats right now. Because he's, you know, he is that limousine, what do they call him, limousine?
Limousine liberals.
Yeah, driving around. But at the same time, you can tell that the dude really does kind of care about Flint, Michigan and his town. And he's still...
Yeah, his background's pretty... background's from Flint.
Yeah, he's still one of these fat slobs that likes
looks
to go
homeless.
Back to his hometown. So
it's not body shame.
So it's, just take a moment and listen to Michael Moore, because I think he explains the Trump voter very accurately. And then we'll join you on the other side and commentate on it a little bit.
Donald Trump came to the Detroit Economic Club and stood there in front of the Ford Motor executives and said, if you close these factories as you're planning to do in Detroit and build them in Mexico, I'm going to put a 35% tariff on those cars when you send them back and nobody's going to buy them. It was an amazing thing to see. No politician, Republican or Democrat, had ever said anything like that to these executives. And it was music to the ears of people in Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, the Brexit states. You live here in Ohio, you know what I'm talking about. Whether Trump means it or not is kind of irrelevant, because he's saying the things to people who are hurting. And it's why every beaten down, nameless, forgotten working stiff who used to be part of what was called the middle class loves Trump. He is the human Molotov cocktail that they've been waiting for. The human hand grenade that they can legally throw into the system that stole their lives from them. And on November 8th, Election Day, although they've lost their jobs, although they've been foreclosed on by the bank, next came the divorce, and now the wife and kids are gone, the car's been repoed, they haven't had a real vacation in years, they're stuck with the shitty Obamacare bronze plan where you can't even get a fucking Percocet. They've essentially lost everything they had, except one thing. The one thing that doesn't cost them a cent and is guaranteed to them by the American Constitution, the right to vote. They might be penniless, they might be homeless, they might be fucked over and fucked up. It doesn't matter, because it's equalized on that day. A millionaire has the same number of votes as the person without a job. One. And there's more of the former middle class than there are in the millionaire class. So on November 8th, the dispossessed will walk into the voting booth, be handed a ballot, close the curtain, and take that lever or felt pen or touchscreen and put a big fucking X in the box by the name of the man who has threatened to upend and overturn the very system that has ruined their lives. Donald J. Trump. They see that the elites who ruined their lives hate Trump. Corporate America hates Trump. Wall Street hates Trump. The career politicians hate Trump. The media hates Trump after they loved him and created him and now hate him. Thank you, media. The enemy of my enemy is who I'm voting for on November 8th. Yes, on November 8th, you, Joe Blow, Steve Blow, Bob Blow, Billy Bob Blow, all the Blows, get to go and blow up the whole goddamn system because it's your right. Trump's election is going to be the biggest fuck you ever recorded in human history. And it will feel good.
I think that sums it up pretty nicely, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely does. I mean, I felt like, you know, if you look at what Trump's platform is, it's no different than Ross's Perot run in 1992. It's the revenge of the NAFTA voter,
right.
The person that lost their job to globalization and trade deals that were designed to keep illegal immigrants from coming over here to earn jobs and keep the jobs there, ended up screwing basically labor-intensive manufacturing that was unionized. And the service jobs and the technician jobs that were supposed to replace it never developed. The IT revolution was, I mean, a lot of those people did try to go to community college and learn those skills.
Mm-hmm.
But then all those jobs were outsourced within 10 years to India and Eastern Europe.
And we're now 18 months away, if that, from a robot sitting in a McDonald's drive-thru handing you your food. You know,
people would much prefer that.
We have talked, and so would companies, because their bottom line would benefit. We've talked before in this program about projections of 50% unemployment in the next 20, 25 years because of AI and robotics. You know, and so what do you do with the bottom end of the economics? Because what
universal income?
Right.
And I mean, that would be that's what I think you should do.
So what is that?
It'd be, so the idea is that, you know, we're lucky. Imagine a world where work isn't even necessary because productivity is so incredible. Your quality of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, the homeless in the United States have iPhones.
Yeah. Right.
You know, they have such a high quality of life, they would be upper middle class in any non-industrialized country.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reality becomes then, what do you do when their labor isn't necessary? When they aren't necessary to the economy or they don't have skills that allow them to participate and earn a living? That's a real problem because that creates social unrest.
Right.
And social unrest is bad for libertarianism.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad for peace, prosperity, civility. And this election proves that.
Right.
And so what you have to do is you say, okay, since you're a member of this nation state, we will say that as long as you are employed and you are a legal citizen and you've met XYZ qualifications, you have a guaranteed minimum income you'll make. So whatever income you make at your job, we will subtract that from X amount. And then monthly, we will add that to a bank account where you are basically like Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And that guarantees a certain level of living tied to inflation, then adjusted for location.
But how is that even remotely libertarian in terms of a solution?
Because the opposite is mass civil unrest. And that looks like this election. Anger.
Mm-hmm.
It's a practicality thing.
Right.
And like Hayek was, you know, the idea is if you had enough nation states competing with universal incomes, then it turns into a competitive environment where citizens are being competed for their skills.
Mm. Did I see that Gary was in favor of this? I saw this was an issue proposed to Gary and he was talking about it.
Well, it's a pragmatic solution. So you look at it and you say, look what we do instead of solving poverty. Look what we do to address poverty. We create institutions. Mm-hmm. We create programs. We try to coordinate with private charities. The reality is poverty is the absence of money.
Mm-hmm.
We already have a treasury department that's set up to do direct deposit and a Social Security administration.
Mm-hmm.
So if all you're trying to do is eliminate poverty, create money. Put money where it isn't.
To me, the smarter solution is to start rolling back corporate income tax, eliminate business taxes,
They don't pay those anyway, though.
Hacking it back. Well, I know, but corporate taxes are part of the reason the businesses leave.
We're talking about so far down the road, though. It's going to be cheaper for you to buy a robot than it is to hire somebody for pennies on the dollar an hour.
Right. I mean, yeah, and it actually doesn't make sense to use human labor because of the costs associated that you have to provide by
the
state.
And the loss, and robots will work 24/7.
Potential for lawsuit, on and on down the line.
Right.
So you get to a point where you say, well, since we don't actually need their labor to participate in the economy, what do we do to quiet unrest, and how do we design it so it doesn't create the freeloader problem where everyone just, you know, stops and says, well, we're good with this level of living? You do it where they have to be employed to receive it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they have to have some kind of job for X amount of hours, and then you deduct whatever the minimum income is from whatever they make.
Sure.
And you do it monthly rather than in after the fact, like we do with income tax returns, where you get refund.
Well, let's save this idea for 20 years from now. Let's focus on the God Emperor right now, though, Greg. So we talked a little bit about why we think he won. I mean, let's expand on that a little bit. I mean, I see the anger, the Tea Party rolled into more anger, and Donald Trump was a politician who finally spoke their language, and it's a big fuck you, because as libertarians, we all understand what it's like to be pissed on and not feel represented and feel overtaxed and oppressed. And Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton is the epitome of Washington, D.C. And if you look at those Senate numbers, if you look here in Indiana, for instance, Todd Young ran against Evan Bayh. Evan Bayh is a centrist. Evan Bayh had $10 million. Evan Bayh is a former popular governor. He's a former United States senator.
He's to the right of John McCain.
Exactly right. He's to the right of John McCain, and he lost like 56-42. And it was a stunt. He was supposed to win, and then it got close. And then Todd Young, at the last days, was supposed to kind of eke out at 50%, 51%, and he blew him out of the water.
Trump's coattails were huge in this state.
They were.
Yeah.
Trump's coattails everywhere were big. But this just goes to show you, here in Indiana, we lost the senators Richard Lugar in a primary to a Tea Party candidate named Richard Murdoch. And Dick Lugar is a centrist Republican, and I've been around the state. I think if you heard the last podcast, I've been around the state for 10 years, and I've never seen Dick Lugar in the flesh. He's never here pressing the flesh. Evan Bayh, Birch Bayh is a guy who spent the 70s and 80s going around, 60s, 70s, and 80s, pressing the flesh, fundraising for other candidates, campaigning with other candidates.
He liked people.
And everybody loved people. Evan Bayh, a little awkward, never in the state, never campaigned, never talked to people. When he was elected, he disappeared for 6 years. Both of those candidates were rejected by Hoosier voters.
popular centrist guys, and we all say how much, you know, we just want reason and rationality in politics. We just want, we don't want the holier than thou. We'll get to an article that I am in love with right now. The, you know, I'm just above it all. I'm just, you know.
I'm so disappointed in my country.
I'm so even and sober-minded, and fuck you.
I'm going to start a Tumblr and address it to the rest of the world, apologizing on behalf of the United States.
Right. You know, and there's so many libertarians and Republicans and Democrats that are all like that. And, you know, we don't want that. We want people to fight for ideas.
Because the truth is, Mitt Romney was that. And if that's what you wanted, you'd have voted for that.
Yep. Exactly right. John McCain, too. The very definition of a track record, a proven track record.
Jeb Bush, John Kasich, right. Marco Rubio, except he was the Hispanic version.
Right.
None of those guys were a fuck you to Washington, though.
They are Washington. Like, they are.
Yeah, and that's what this vote came down to.
And so I was under the impression that the people that are angry over politics wanted to change Washington.
They want it gone.
America wants to fucking destroy Washington, D.C. And I didn't get that message until yesterday. I don't think that they got that message until yesterday. I didn't even realize it until today, and I'll play you a clip in just a second.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I said this is what the exit polling showed. This is why, you know, I really watched the Iowa primary closely because I thought Rand was going to have a strong showing and finish third or second. Yeah. And when I saw that Ron's entire delegation and support system abandoned Rand for Trump because, and then the number one reason every single time by a huge margin was because he was perceived as an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is bad. If you are an elected official in this, Carly Fiorina, who unsurprisingly rocketed up, you know, those were the people that had a real advantage as long as they could
play
the
part.
Ben Carson, if he just wasn't, he's a great man and really smart, just
he's awkward.
No instinctual ability at politics at all.
No. He's so if you want a treat, and you need a treat, Greg, you and our listeners should go listen to the most recent episode of the New York Times Run-Up podcast. It is funereal and hilarious, the sadness that is oozing out of the pores of those poor people. They're so upset. And, you know, they were just talking about, and this just goes to show you the argument that Trump has made about the rigged media, and it's so true. He goes, they were like, well, you know, the arguments that we've made against Trump are more...
They're elitist.
They haven't been as powerful as the arguments Trump has made. So when we make the argument that Donald Trump is sexist and he says horrible things and he doesn't believe what he says, they just don't listen to us.
No kidding. Right. You won't talk to them. You
right.
look down your nose at them.
It doesn't matter anyway.
And, you know, there was actually a good letter today by some, I think he was a writer for Vox, that wrote what the liberals need to do, what we need to do if we're going to be serious going forward, and is that we need to have a dialogue with these people and we need to quit pretending they're less than us.
Yeah, the argument, or the article is titled the, and Vox, you go read the headlines. The headlines on Vox today are hilarious. I mean, just while I pull this up, I'll read you some of the headlines from Vox, which was started by Ezra Klein.
They were probably handing out quarts of bleach to everybody in the office.
Oh, my God. It is so funny. Let's see here. Donald Trump now has a whole country to govern, not just Breitbart Nation. Hillary Clinton's concession speech. Trump will be the fourth president to win the Electoral College after getting fewer votes than its opponent. There's no way around it. Donald Trump is going to be a disaster for the planet. I'm a disabled American. Trump's policies will be a disaster for people
identity
like me.
Politic.
Trump, no, they won't. He'll just mock you publicly during a rally.
Trump and the
dick.
GOP can absolutely repeal Obamacare and 22 million people will lose their health insurance.
They're going to lose it anyway.
Trump's election marks the end of any serious hope of limiting climate change to 2 degrees.
God.
So it is. It's just in full tilt. So this article is from Vox, and it is titled "The Smug Style of American Liberalism." Also, if you want to listen to that Michael Moore thing or share that, that's called "Michael Moore Gives Powerful Endorsement of Donald Trump." I don't believe that's what he was doing, but no. That's from his film denouncing Donald Trump. So the title of this article by Emmett Renson is titled "The Smug Style in American Liberalism." And let me just read you a few of the highlights here. It has led an American ideology hitherto responsible for a great, of course, ideology hitherto. It has led an American ideology hitherto responsible for a great share of the good accomplished over the past century of our political life to a posture of reaction and disrespect. A condescending, defensive sneer towards any person or movement outside of its consensus dressed up as a monopoly on reason. And this is so what he's saying, let me translate liberal to you, is that liberals have a problem by posturing and reacting to people with derision, dressed up as a monopoly of reason. The trouble, you know, and this is sort of him mocking his own kind. The trouble is that stupid hicks don't know what's good for them. They're getting conned by right-wingers and tent revivalists until they believe all the lies that made them so wrong. They don't know any better. That's why they're voting against our own self-interest.
Let's go save them.
As anybody who has gone through a particularly nasty breakup knows, disdain cultivated in the aftermath of a divide quickly exceeds the original grievance. You lose somebody. You blame them. Soon the blame is reason enough to keep them at a distance, the excuse to drive them even further away. Elites, real elites, might even recognize one another. And so what he was, his point there was, you know, because you act with such, like, you shame people and call them racist and dumb, they go, fuck you. I'm not going to listen to you. And the entire point of the article is that the reason they lost is because the Democrats, formerly the champions of the poor person and the union worker, have lost that base completely to the Republicans.
Oh, it evaporated because Clinton is the father of NAFTA and the end of labor unions.
Yep. And so then he goes on to talk, and this just hits home because the millennials are freaking out today.
You, what don't they freak out about, though?
Right.
Come on.
And so, you know, talking about how knowledge, you know, liberals are just so much smarter than everybody else.
Why do they keep losing?
Yeah, they just saw this coming from a mile away.
Mm-hmm. Horn-rimmed glasses barista with a scarf is part of the elite. Elites, real elites, like you, barista boy, might recognize one another by their superior knowledge. The smug recognize one another by their mutual knowing. Knowing, for example, that the founding fathers were all secular deists, Aaron. Knowing that you're actually, like, 30 times more likely to shoot yourself than an intruder. Knowing that those fools out in Kansas are voting against their own self-interest, and the trouble that is that Kansas doesn't know any better. Knowing all the jokes that signal this knowledge. The studies about Daily Show viewers are better sized.
Daily Show.
Amy Gedali? What the fuck is this word? Amygdala. Are knowing. It is smug style's first premise. A politics defined by a command of the correct facts. Capital correct facts. And signaled by an allegiance to the culture, correct culture. A politics that is just the politics of smart people in command of good facts. A politics that insists it has no ideology at all, only facts. No moral convictions, only charts. The kind that keep them from imposing their morals like the bad guys do. Knowing is the shibboleth into the smug styles culture. A cultural that celebrates hip commitments and valorizes hip taste, that loves nothing more than hate reading anyone who doesn't get them, a culture that has come to replace politics itself. The knowing know that the police reform, that abortion rights, that labor unions are important, but go no further. What is important, after all, is to signal that you know these things. What is important is to launch links and mockery at those who don't. The good facts are enough. Anybody who fails to capitulate to them is part of the capital P problem. And they are terminally uncool. No persuasion, only retweets. Eye rolling, crying emoji. Forward to John Oliver for sick burns.
John fucking Oliver.
Captain Cuck.
I'm going to have to go get chemotherapy after that cancer.
I don't watch John Oliver, John Stewart, any of them. Because, you know, I don't watch anything Seth Meyers does. Because
I don't watch ETV.
No, you know, they're smarmy, self-satisfied minorities. I mean, there's no way that will ever be a governing delegation in the United States because they are so self-righteous and self-satisfied, they don't dare go out and do outreach or intermingle with the folks that are different with them or there's any diversity of belief.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love that quote. It's, you know, that liberals always claim to be for diversity, and then they're always shocked and offended when they encounter it.
Right. And it's hard to remember that this is the first election that millennials have lost, because millennials only, for the most part, if I can stereotype, only really engage with presidential elections. And so that's what they consider elections to be, is just our dear leader.
They buy local. They sure as hell don't vote local.
Right. And so, you know, there's always exceptions to that rule, but by and large, they go and vote for president. This is the first one that they've lost, and they lost in a big way to... you know,
hey there,
to everything that's bad.
If you don't want to,
every buzzword in the book.
If you don't want to be fearful, don't vote for politicians that play on your fear. We built this election up to an absolute Armageddon, and now one side lost, and they're marching in the streets.
The difference was though, I don't watch South Park. Mm-hmm. I don't watch these things. I always saw Trump's message and like talking to Trump supporters as hope. It right. never occurred to me until you really talked about it, how it was fear. It was always hope that we were going back to a different era.
No.
And so, like, to the opposition, it was that was the misread. But to the people on Trump's side, it was all hope.
Right.
It was indistinguishable between Barack Obama and Yes We Can.
Yeah.
But it's just sold in a packaging that looks so different. It looked like fear and a reaction rather than progressive and moving forward.
Yeah, I think to everybody and to anybody that watched the media, Make America Great Again was code for racial politics and you know,
segregation.
white power, and because that's what the media, that's the way that
that's
the media spun
it.
Right, but I didn't really understand until last night when I really sat and thought about it. Make America Great Again is that guy in Anderson that wants two high schools, that wants his friends to move back.
Proud.
Wants a job and wants to be proud of his community again.
It's nationalism.
And doesn't want a nephew that he's supporting who's selling meth. You know, that's what that means to those people. It's
nostalgia.
Yeah.
And that's the most powerful thing you can invoke in an election.
Right.
Yep. Even more so than hope.
Yep.
You bring nostalgia into the fray, it wins every time.
Yep.
You know, and that's just what Trump got from the beginning. And it wasn't even original. He was copying Reagan.
No, he copied Reagan. He added again on it.
He didn't do the Iowa primary. He didn't do the Iowa debate. Like, he just was like, I'm going to do exactly what he did, and I'm going to cut the lets off, and then we're just going to run with it.
Yep.
And it worked. I mean, that's the thing, though, is that nostalgia trumps hope. Hope, though, beats fear, unless it's just a dire economic situation, like in the midst of a depression. But, you know, even FDR said, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Well,
you know, he was hopeful in that era, in that time of crisis.
Yeah, I mean, I've lived in that smug liberal bubble, and it's because it's the media that I consume. And it's
the women you swipe right on.
The women I swipe right on, that's for sure. And you lose sight that there's a whole different segment of the population that hears hope when you hear fear. And that's what so many the people on the left, these millennials that are freaking out, you know, that are, I'm so worried for my country.
I spent all night crying.
I'm disappointed in you, America. I just don't know how I can go on.
Well, don't worry. You're going to be in the helicopter, so it'll be fine.
I'm currently looking
Move to
for
Canada.
Canada is going to build a wall to keep you out.
They don't want your cuckery.
Yeah. Right. So
Trudeau might, you never know.
Yeah. So,
well, no, they don't want to add you to their welfare rolls.
It's true.
They're having to get restrictive on their immigration policies because it adds to the welfare state and it makes them run a deficit.
Yep.
You know, that's the nature of the beast.
Well, what do you mean? It's free money.
Yeah. We've got a Federal Reserve. We just print that shit.
So
it's like Johnny Knoxville in strip club. Bad grandpa.
Make it rain. Yeah. I want to play this Trump supporter woman last night. It's got 700,000 views. Justin Martinez shared it. I shared it on my Facebook, Chris Spangle. Hopefully you can get there in time because I'm sharing rapidly.
Has to be a joke. I cannot believe this is happening. I'm literally about to fucking kill myself, and I'm not kidding. You better fucking fix this shit right now. I literally am gonna die. I need an ambulance. I can't believe.
Let's just replay that.
So she's for Trump?
No, she's for Hillary. This is.
Joke. I cannot believe this is happening. I'm literally about to fucking kill myself, and I'm not kidding. You better fucking fix this shit right now. I literally am gonna die. I need an ambulance. I can't believe
it's And then Liberal Revolution, this guy just cries for 3 minutes straight. It's so funny. Like, people are just losing their minds today over this. And now, like, I've never had more fun in my life.
Oh, I told you. This is what this entire year's been like for me. Just striking fear into the hearts of these just total morons.
And they thought there was no way in hell that this guy would even get the nomination.
Well, Trump can't win. I mean, everyone knows.
1% or... Nate yeah. Silver, my favorite meme is just Nate Silver's face. Oh, Trump's ceiling is 3%. Trump's ceiling's 7%. And then it's all the way up to...
Nate Silver says for the seventh time this election.
Yeah.
Trump
increasingly nervous man.
Nate Silver, for me, is in the Jake Tapper territory. You cannot make fun of him.
But he got criticized because they said when he said 35% was Trump's going... They said that he put his thumb on the scale to bump it up to give himself coverage. And I thought... No.
He went off.
They were so blind.
He was the only one that is even close. And the Huffington Post is now out for it. Was out for Nate Silver that last week. The title was "What is wrong with Nate Silver?" You know, and again,
have you seen him? He looks like he's been pulling his hair out.
He's not slept very much. They have the 538 has a great podcast. Their election podcast is great. I love listening to it. You know, but there's so many numbers that it goes by so fast, but you pick up a lot. It's really interesting.
And it wasn't necessarily the polling industry's fault.
It wasn't because
people would not admit they were going to vote for Donald Trump. They didn't want to say that in front of friends and family. They were embarrassed.
They wouldn't tell pollsters. There's also, I just don't think that phones are a valid way of polling in this day and age anymore.
It's not anymore.
No.
But then internet ones get flooded by raids on
trolls
and
everything else. Yeah. You're not going to get an honest poll.
No. The only way to do it is to listen to the national dialogue and talk to people. And that's the thing liberals hate the most.
And I thought the biggest indicator for me was watching the rallies and actually watching the reaction to Donald Trump's actual message while he's talking in real time and seeing the reaction of the crowd, the huge crowds. And they never showed any of that on the national news, any of his...
YouTube was the only place you could really go.
You'd have to watch Right Side Broadcast, and you're talking 60,000, 80,000 views on top of the thousands of people who are there.
And that was a total stupid financial decision because those were great entertainment.
It was
2 hours of daily, you know, 6 hours if he did three rallies.
Well, he did...
And they
he
were
would
hilarious.
Do three a day.
I would be talking to you while he was doing one. It's like, the snake.
He'd tell
back.
The snake story and everything. And they were great, but come to find out, I mean, the media's in Clinton's pocket. She's...
Well, literally, they all have their jobs because they served in her communications department, her husband's communications
department. They would email back and forth about what questions to ask candidates
and everything else. Like, when I was reading that, I was like, well, you know what? These people did earn their badges of honor together. These people came up in 1992, and they were the outsiders.
Right.
Bill Clinton was the outsider's outsider.
And you can't blame him for wanting that access either, but they're so out of touch with...
But they're all been friends now for like 25 years, 26 years. And so like I always was kind of like, well, I mean, it'd be like if Spangle and I didn't talk, you know, because he decided to work, you know, he went to go work for CNN or something, and I was helping a libertarian candidate, you know, like, and you didn't want it to look, you know...
But
so
you don't want to look like,
and so I would want to talk politics because that's what we talk. But I can't. But are, you know, am I supposed to not ask you political questions or ask for feedback on things, even though you've been my go-to for like 30 years?
Because people like us don't small talk. I don't small talk.
Yeah,
do you
I don't
small
either.
Talk?
No, it's a waste of time.
We're getting if you are talking to me, we're getting business done. I don't give. Nope. I don't know the names of my best friend's kids. I know how they're voting.
I know memes, right. And I know business.
Talk to me about memes.
Saw some dank pepes earlier.
Right.
Fresh dank pepes.
Is he still a hate speech? Will he still be considered hate speech by the
God? Yes.
Anti-Defamation
League?
No.
You guys understand how bad this is about to get, right?
Oh yeah.
I can't wait.
There will never be a absolute full court press and all out assault on a presidential candidate like we're about to see.
It's going to be great because it was always going to be that way. It was going to be the right would be protesting tonight and would be gearing up the machine. And you know what? The Clintons are scorned and they're going to build up their machine. The Obama machine is, you know, Obama's a young man. And I mean, his line, just what a devastating line he had this week, which was if his own staff won't trust him with his Twitter, then how can we trust him with the nuclear codes? Fuck, that's good. You know what I mean? Like it's
the thing is though. Like this is like that when I watched a lot of John Oliver. I did watch some John Oliver, and I thought, What he doesn't understand is that every time someone on the right sees his clips, they're gonna like literally carry four people to the polls send him back to United Kingdom and then ask him what happened. You know, remember when George Washington opened up that can of whoop ass on you?
Yeah, you know, and I just want to read what I wrote on that article when I shared it on Facebook. That smugness thing, the feeling that I have today, and I just realized today that okay, why are they losing their minds? Oh, they feel the way that we felt in 2008. Okay, so I think
worse though.
Worse because it's Donald Trump,
and because there are people that can't tolerate the diversity of opinion.
Right. So when in 2008, I remember at the Jazz Kitchen watching Obama give his speech. Our party last night at the Libertarian Party, over 100 people. We had the best time of our life, and we didn't give a shit who was president or not. Like, it could have been Hillary, it could have been... We were just having a great time. But we cared much more 8 years ago. And so when he won, you got to think back. Jeremiah Wright, the birth certificate stuff,
President Trump literally was the original birther.
Right.
Yeah. Well, technically Hillary Clinton was the original. Right.
Yeah. But
he pushed it. Yeah. He pushed it.
He made it great again.
It just was so much fear. He's going to change everything we love. He's going to and so for people like me, I sit there and I go, I kind of like Obama. I don't like his policies or his politics, but I like him as a person. And he was he seems like a decent man.
Yeah. He's smart.
Yeah.
Of any modern president, no one has a better grasp of political philosophy.
And he's got swag too.
And he understands. Yeah. He's one of those people that understands the opposing side's argument, which is so rare.
So, you know, you look back and you go, he didn't destroy our country. Obamacare's real bad and it's real effed up. And he continued the policies of Bush, but for Trump people, he's destroyed the country, you know, and he has this way of mocking people that is so Alinskyite. If you have not read Saul Alinsky's book, he has perfected it. And so I was really thinking, like, oh, they're where we were in 2008 as libertarians and conservatives going, the socialists have won, they're going to transform our country. And
it was Glenn, like, if you remember the Glenn Beck during that era,
oh God,
he was doing hour-long information sessions on Vladimir Lenin and Trotsky and about how it would, the slow boil of communism.
Was that before or after the Flamin' Hot Cheetos to the face?
So here's what I wrote. This is why none of us on the left, or none of us who are not on the left, care about your sensitive little egos and your feelings today. Libertarians and conservatives have been eating shit for 8 years. We've been marginalized and mocked for not being right or good, quote unquote. The idea that the left might be wrong never enters into their heads. Instead of engaging with facts, we are met with derision and scoffs. When you're calling conservatives and libertarians or even blue-collar, uneducated whites that vote Democrat stupid or racist, are you caring about the feelings of the person on the other side? No. We are supposed to see wisdom and change our minds to be accepted because of your John Oliver video. We privately laugh at your calls for decency and political speech when we are dealt with so smugly. So then I go on to share some of the highlights. It's like, somebody who sent me a breathless email today with an MSNBC article saying, okay, read this. Is this what he's going to do? Is he going to repeal Obamacare? Is he going to appoint this person? Is he going to do that thing? I go, yeah, he's going to do all of it, and it's going to be awesome, and I'm happy about it. He's going to roll back all the progress from Barack Obama, and that's good. And they go, they're horrified by that.
But he didn't do anything. President Obama's only accomplishment is Obamacare, and he did it in a way that he knew it was unsustainable, and that was the whole point, that it forced the issue, whether it has to be universal or you have to get rid of it and replace it with something else. You know, it was designed with its demise known from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, the risk corridors were set up in such a way that if the rate stayed even remotely close to where they were, the subsidies to the insurance companies and individuals would be so large, it'd cause a debt crisis.
So let me put that in English. So we just had our insurance meetings at work. Nerd. So we just had our meetings at work, and everybody's like, I can't believe our company's raising our rates. I go, our company's not raising our rates. We're only going up 10%. Our boss is eating the other 8%.
They're doing us a great favor. That's awesome. We should thank them. Well, I can't believe it's going up at all. This is like losing 8% of your 10% of your salary. I go, did you vote Democrat? Yeah, I voted for Obama. He said things were going to be cheaper. I go, well, you're to blame because Obamacare was set up to fail and to push small business owners off of giving insurance to their employees. So we would then go into the exchanges, which would then make it a more competitive marketplace. And that's why you get what Michael Moore is saying with the bronze package, which barely covers anything.
I'm going through that right now.
Right.
Our company got rid of it and they're pushing us to Obamacare. And I said, I'm not taking shit. I'll pay the penalty. I don't care.
It's an 8% per employee tax.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
I would get that money or, you know, he could make more profit and buy more equipment.
Hire more people.
Right. So that's what it was designed to do. It was designed to collapse the system. So then we'd all go, let's get single payer. So.
Which, you know, I mean, that's the thing is that no, like, even people on Medicare don't realize the deficit that runs. You know, it isn't felt
huge.
Because it's not, you know, it's not something where there's a fund and whatever's collected in taxes for Medicare is what is paid out and that's it to the beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm.
It runs incredible deficits and they think
that
can continue forever and that there will never be an increase in, you know, our treasury bills, which would spark a debt crisis, and then you'd have no welfare state. It would only be to be able to pay for healthcare.
All right, so we're going to talk about the future in the GOP segment, but let's get to Clinton. Are we done with Trump? Have we fleshed everything out?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
lock her up. Lock her up.
So
drain the swamp.
I thought he gave an excellent acceptance.
Yeah, his speech last night was amazing. I stayed up.
It showed what a more class individual he is than she is. Because she, you know, I love the meme that, oh look, she didn't answer. You know, she didn't answer this call at 3 a.m. either.
Yeah. Oh god, that's
that.
Great.
That's funny.
My favorite part about it was though the song he played going out.
Yeah.
What did he play?
He played Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want, and it was epic.
A fucking internet troll is president.
Yeah.
No, he's...
Meme magic was real.
Yeah. Memes... Don't you tell me memes don't work.
Praise be to
God. They won the presidency. He didn't have that much momentum, and then a bunch of trolls...
Autistic.
When he called Mexicans rapist, it was out of the starting gates, and they, you know, 4chan flooded to him.
Yeah, they jumped
like it was
on him.
The god they'd never seen.
Right. So, okay, so moving forward, do you see a Trump that is going to be the incinerator? Because if you really look, like, so the media always brings up the stuff that happened early on in the campaign, but he really has been much more controlled these last few months.
He will be. I think he's...
Do you expect an incendiary Trump?
No, absolutely not.
I do when he's trying to... He's going to be the best bully in the bully pulpit that anyone on the right's ever seen.
Mm.
It doesn't work for him, and he proved that in the primaries and everything else.
Oh yeah, but I mean, so like, you know, he's in a weird position because he is actually more, you know, he leans slightly left.
Right. Yeah,
he is slightly left of Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton actually limited the welfare state and repealed it, but with welfare reform. And so Trump's different in that he's going to have some opportunities to do give and take that any other Republican wouldn't have had.
Absolutely.
So he can do a national minimum wage, for instance, by pairing it with harder vetting for illegal employees, but then also packaging that with the flattening of the tax code
mm-hmm.
and corporate tax reform and then getting rid of all the lobbying interests and deductions. And he really isn't owned by any of the major political players in the United States.
Yeah.
There isn't a major, you know, Sheldon Adelson, those types, that can influence him because he didn't need the money. I mean, it was $5 per vote is what it came out to.
I heard before we on Fox News that Sheldon Adelson, it was reported that he put $25 million into the last week. But they're saying he actually put in upwards of $75 million to super PACs to flood TV and those battleground states.
Those are run by Rince Priebus and the Republican Party.
Yeah. Right.
And Trump was, Trump said what a superstar Rince Priebus was.
Yeah.
He
praised him.
No, we'll talk about Rince because I do. That guy is a miracle worker. But so let's move on to Clinton.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for her almost watching today because when she gave her acceptance speech, it has to be such an awful ego blow to lose to a first-term senator with Hussein in the middle of his funny name,
A 74-year-old socialist nearly beat her. And then she lost to Donald Trump for the presidency.
Who's the anti-Hillary?
There couldn't be a bigger rejection of a single political figure, except maybe, I mean, Nixon really only lost in 60, and that was a big rejection.
But he was still Eisenhower's vice president.
Right, but she's lost twice and nearly a third time. I mean, if he had won Iowa, it would have been all over.
If Barack Obama had never had her be Secretary of State, his entire presidency looks different.
Yeah.
Because she was the one that sold him on regime change and intervention so many times in the Middle East, when if it had been in his end, he would have never trusted that instinct.
Yep.
He'd had way more political capital.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. All of the scandals in his administration lay at her feet.
She literally, by being associated, now, she did earn it by providing the team and all the talent necessary to fill out the bureaucracy.
Right.
Because otherwise, he'd have been up a creek.
Right.
Because he had no roster to go to and call in.
Which is sort of what Trump is facing now, which is why he's going to have to make nice with certain Bush people.
Well, then you become Jimmy Carter, and then you get one term because you're trying to do it all yourself.
Right.
And there's no way of doing that. Yeah. Like, you end up getting paranoid because you feel like you can't trust anybody, and you're constantly watching out for scandal, and you never accomplish anything.
Yeah. The media is turning on her. They are really just... saying she's the worst candidate in American history. I heard
she ran
today.
The most entitled campaign I've ever seen.
Everybody was entitled. I mean, she did. It was this last week. It had every. You know, I'm not a sports watcher, but I will occasionally watch. And when I really watched the Colts religiously, I could tell when they were going to lose, because there was just this attitude in the city and around the team that they had Jacksonville in the bag. And they were going to walk into the worst team in the conference, and then they get blown out because they were overconfident. And it really had that feel the past couple weeks. And he had the Newsweek people, the topics licensee of Newsweek, printed those tens of thousands Madam Secretary magazines. They had a Trump one prepared, but they didn't print it because it was just a sure thing she was going to win. You know, and the polls never were that close. It was always going to be it was either going to be over by 9:30 or it was going to be,
turns out it was over by 10:30 for her.
It
was an early night for Hillary Clinton.
That was the greatest part when they were what is her path to victory?
Her firewall was not big.
Can you take the hater glasses off? You're really freaking me out.
You guys are throwing me shade. I love it.
No, you leave them on. I've been taking pictures over here.
These are actual safety goggles, too, in case you want to throw rocks or
Klein tool safety goggles.
Shoot at me.
Is he not the quintessential Trump voter?
No.
I didn't vote for Trump.
He didn't vote for him. He voted for Gary.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
No, I voted for Gary.
Yeah.
Trump had the state sewed up.
Oh, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I told you that a long time ago.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, I was planning on doing it, and I thought, you know what? The fact, because Hillary is really what drove, Hillary drove me more than Trump.
Yeah.
She is a criminal. She's a felon.
She is.
She has put the safety, she has abandoned a U.S. ambassador. She has just done nothing to show that she will protect anyone that's on her team or staff or any American. And Bill Weld giving her that endorsement to me left the worst taste in my mouth. And I thought, you know what? Forget that. Because at the end of the day, let's say I were taken to North Korea, I was trying to do investigative journalism over there and got caught. I would want Donald Trump going batshit insane rather than Hillary Clinton standing there with her mean look.
Yeah. Or,
and then falling over trying
a
to
YouTube
climb off
video
the stairs.
Or Gary apologizing.
Well, yeah, and I just thought, you know what? At the end of the day, if Weld and Johnson had run center-right, which would actually been the only center-right or the only actual Republican campaign in this race,
right?
Then I would have felt differently. But, man, Bill they're besties. Like they're basically Barack and Joe or Bill Weld and Hillary.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's really something.
Yeah.
It's...
He's desperate, but he ran as VP to get relevant nationally again, and then was hoping to God that he could get back in the DC establishment circles so he's out of the Netherlands of irrelevancy.
He couldn't have read this cycle more wrongly.
Oh, he's like David Brooks.
To the point that he threw his own people under the bus.
Completely, and they trusted him. And Gary vouched for him, and the best speech Gary gave of the entire election season was him asking for Weld and asking the LNC delegates to give him to vote for Bill.
And I just, I feel sorry for Gary because that's a personal hero of his. And, you know, never meet your heroes, man. I mean, it just, yeah, it's really sucky.
Oh, yeah. And he's a guy that really just sounded the part. That's the thing, is he would sound...
Well, he's a politician.
Well, yeah, he'd sound right libertarian, but then he'd go and endorse Hillary. And then he wrote that diatribe about how Trump can't be trusted. And it just showed that he's a member... Or he's actually not a member. He's got looking glass. You know, he's looking through the window at the people that he wants to be a part of,
it's
who
like
are
the
no
kid
longer
that wants
involved.
To be invited to the party, but,
right?
You know,
except you know he doesn't even get invited, and the party just got canceled.
Yep. Yeah, but he released a statement saying that the Libertarian Party has a bright future, and he plans to be a significant part of it. But I don't think they want that, Bill.
Well, he has to now because he was planning on being part of the Clinton administration.
He's pulling a Rubio, huh?
Plan B. So okay, so Hillary. You know, it is amazing to me, part of the, you know, Hillary ran a traditional campaign, and, you know, Donald Trump spent more on the hats than he spent on get out the vote. And in the world that I live in, get out the vote effort is everything. It really comes down to how many touches with the voter can you have. If you can build a machine that can have several touches with the voter along the way in key areas, then you can win. If you can make phone calls, they made 8 million phone calls on Saturday alone, you know, hundreds of thousands of people walking for her across the nation and Democratic candidates, and just a significant get-out-the-vote effort and TV and, you know, spent $1 billion on this race, and she got killed.
Yeah. And I see, like, to me, that's always been a false idea because to me, Perot's always been the third party model. Mm-hmm. If you can pull it off. I mean, you have to have media access and you have to find voters. You have to really nail down the sentiment of the electorate. But as long as you do that and you hammer away and you're incredibly disciplined and you strike that chord, you can get turned. I mean, he got 8%. And he had no ground game.
By being incredibly disciplined.
On Larry... No, he did. I mean, because he talked about...
Oh, you're talking about
NAFTA.
Ross Perot.
Yeah, Ross Perot was incredibly disciplined. He stuck to NAFTA,
to the point.
Tax reform, and he talked about, you know, giving a fair deal to the American worker.
The thing with that is that, you know, these are once-in-a-lifetime cycles. We're going to be in our 50s or 60s before another one of these comes along.
No.
You know, it's just like Ross Perot. We were kids.
But there's a big part of the United States population still right now that feels unrepresented by any kind of political philosophy or political party.
Sure.
Huge part.
And the centrist idea, like centrist libertarianism, the radical moderates of what Weld and Johnson tried to do, mm-hmm. isn't wrong. It's just wrong in how they go about it.
Yeah.
They went into it as rationality.
Right.
If you go into it as, listen, this is incredibly important. This is what we're going to do to fix your life and how it's going to benefit you. And this is how we can do it. And since we're libertarians and not owned by anybody, this is the framework and this is why it will work.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is vote for us. And they stick to just two or three issues that are polling high rather than trying to explain libertarianism and how a libertarian government would look.
Right.
You can be a three issue presidential candidate and crush the numbers that you can trying to build out a full governing philosophy.
Look how little actually breaks through. For all the interviews that he did, there's only certain memes that come out of...
Bake
the cake in Aleppo.
What's Aleppo?
Right. And that's literally all anybody said to me is, what is Aleppo? And it's all these liberal kids, and it's a way
who had no
mocking.
Idea what the hell Syria...
Right.
Where
never
Syria
heard of Aleppo
is, let
ever.
Alone Aleppo.
I love Caitlyn, but that's... What is Aleppo? I'm so cool. Like, whatever.
Trump. Yeah.
Right. Okay, Grundy. So
God Emperor's here.
It's time for maximum freedom. Get mm-hmm. in. So you see sort of what, if you really reflect back on the Johnson campaign, it reflects what we've been saying all along. You've got to be disciplined with your message. You've got to build the meme before it happens for you.
And a lot of times we try to take what we already believe and try to make that be relevant to the voter.
Yeah.
That's the backwards. That's the exact opposite way of where you should go about it. Right. Great politicians are mirrors. Yep. So they find out what is, you know, what's actually going on and what voters are angry about and care about. Then that's their message. And they look for a crowd and then decide to go lead it.
So let's do a test. What does Donald Trump stand for? Give me the one sentence summation of what they stand for in their message.
Right now?
He's not DC.
If you're a voter on election day and you had one sentence for each of the three candidates, what would you say?
He's going to be my advocate.
Yeah. Make America great again.
I mean, make America great, but I mean, America first.
Right.
Yeah. You know, America first is, I think, the more takeaway in that we're tired of being asked to carry the water of being world police when we can't even get our teachers out of poverty to pay them to teach our children.
Yep. You're going to be proud to be an American.
We're going to put ourselves first for a while.
Hillary Clinton.
Pedophile.
Cannibal. No.
Devil worshiper.
Yeah. I'm the most experienced candidate to ever run for the presidency. Entitled.
How am I losing? That would be what I would... like, you know, history. How am I not up by 50
You have
points?
To get out of your zone. And most people, I think if you're just the regular Joe Public, you'd go, okay, make America great again. I'm going to be proud of my country. I'm the most qualified person. If the phone rings at 3 a.m., and I'll answer it.
I think it was more woman voter than
as
anything.
As long as the phone isn't at the top of a flight of stairs.
What is Gary Johnson's sentence? What is Aleppo? And it's because he didn't have a central message to his campaign that he hammered. You know, there's a Senate candidate here in Indiana, Lucy Brenton, who had, you know, really great record numbers. She had a killer debate performance. And it's because every time she opened her mouth, at some point, she would joke, you know, say, I'm a mom. I'm a mom. I have 10 kids. I'm a mom. As a mom,
I was a Marine.
Right. It's it worked with Todd Young. That's how he won. I'm a Marine.
Low
I'm
energy.
A Marine. I'm a
little
Marine.
Marco. Right. Lion Ted.
Yeah.
Like dumb is
it's
way
branding.
Better.
It's branding. I mean, right. And Trump is the master.
I have a 23 year old friend. She came over and she goes, "Guess what? You're gonna be so proud of me. I'm voting for the Libertarian in the Senate race." I go, "What's her name?" She goes, "I don't know, but she's the mom I'm voting for. I really liked her in the debate. She couldn't get the name out of the debate, but she wanted to be informed, so she watched the debate, and she picked up that she was the mom. And she goes, I'm voting for her. She seems really smart.
Trustworthy.
Yep. And so, but there was something for their brain to catch on to. Gary Johnson didn't have that. Even in 2012, it was live free, live free, live free. It was on everything, everywhere. Live free, live free, live free. Be libertarian with me. Be libertarian with me. I don't know what their slogan was this time.
I mean, you know, what was it? It was
I know 4chan named him Memes Johnston. So yeah. I knew it was pretty much over after that.
Yeah, I mean, when 4chan turns on you, you're done. You know, for me, you know, your life, your rules, or something like that.
Right.
You know, it has to be something easily understood. And, you know, Gary is so likable. And yet, you know, you have to be authentic and it has to work that way. But unfortunately, it just doesn't. They never found their groove. Johnson Weld was the thing.
Right. Johnson Weld promoting that they're too.
It almost seemed like it got in. They were just behind the eight ball so far. They just kind of.
Well, it became trying to collect this disenfranchised middle and unrepresented middle who felt above the fray.
They had no idea who they were.
They thought that they could catch people who were trying to decide between, you know, Hillary and Donald.
Yeah.
The reality was their race was for people who weren't going to go to the polls at all and who were going to vote for them.
Yeah.
And that's the tough thing to understand. And you have to remember that this is a team sport. Like the Cubs, when you bash the Cubs, you grow up your whole life, you're a Cubs fan or you're a Yankees fan. The Republicans are the Yankees, the Democrats are the Cubs. They spent their whole life where their social status, their place in society, their interpersonal and family relationships.
Bonding.
Are completely, their entire social experience is built around their association with a political party. So they're naturally going to be protective of it anytime you hit it. Their instinct is going to be, well, hey now, you know, let's, you know, Hillary is a lot of things, but, you know, she's still better than Trump.
Sure.
And so that can't be the way you go about it is by hitting, especially, you know, when you're the equivalent of a single A baseball franchise.
Right.
You can't go around bashing the Yankees and the Cubs and saying, now come to us.
He tried playing their game and it wasn't going to work.
Right.
He just needed to lay out the agenda and how we were going to change everything and make America great again.
It comes down to power. I'm going to use my power for your benefit. Yeah. That's what people want. And we have no power. And so we have to build power. And how do you build power? It's by coalitioning.
Yeah. Or like saying to the left, you say, well, listen, I'm going to restructure government so that whether or not Donald Trump ever wins an election, you'll never have to worry about him having an effect on your life.
Yeah.
Or you say to the Republican
voter,
he can
be the president, still
listen, it's pretty clear that Donald Trump isn't doesn't represent traditional, you know, Republican values. I'm the candidate that's serious about spending and make sure that your grandchildren aren't paying your debts.
I'm going to keep taxes low, and I'm going to keep...
Don't you want the economy to grow again?
Right. So Hillary Clinton, we agree, ran a terrible campaign.
She just never really campaigned. She ran anti-Trump.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the whole, why aren't I up 50 points? Well, I mean, that was her whole...
But again, I mean, it really comes down to, I'm not Trump. We're stronger together.
John Gregg. It was his original campaign plan against Mike Pence in Indiana.
I'm not Mike Pence.
She had it sewed up as soon as he won the nomination.
Right. And you see that in some of the emails. But the problem with that is that voters... We want to mock voters for being dumb and stupid, but they're not.
Because ultimately, we need them to vote for us.
Well, no, it's not just that. I don't know how to explain this. It's like this hive mind that just goes, okay, there's a cancer and this needs to go, and it is Washington, D.C., and you can't fool people. People see who you are, and they're going to act accordingly. Yep. And with Hillary Clinton, they know Hillary Clinton, they know her character, they know who she is, and they don't like it.
And that's why she tried staying out of the spotlight.
Right, and so what she tried to do is run a character campaign, and by making the argument that he is of lesser character than me, and that just doesn't work with a lot of the country.
Nope. Ha ha ha, isn't he stupid?
Right.
That was basically her entire campaign strategy.
John King is sitting on CNN today going, I don't know what her economic plan was. No, she didn't have red meat. And so we say that voters are dumb, but they're not dumb. You can't... It's again, they took things for granted. They had a smug attitude. They played it safe. They played the game as it was supposed to be played. And they didn't give enough red meat to people. And at the end of the day, voters still need some red meat. And if you think back to the debates... I don't remember a single plan coming out of those debates from really either one of them.
But you'd be in jail.
Right. But at least, you know, with Donald Trump, you can sit here and go, he's going to build a wall. He's going to repeal Obamacare.
We don't have to pay for it.
Right.
So actually, if you look at his website, he lays out his plan
pretty much
in detail.
Don't do the research.
No, but
it's general platitudes. You know, it's in the absence of a vision by a leader, all people will go to whatever fills that vacuum. Yeah, and people, Hillary never filled the vacuum, and Trump did.
Yep. And Trump was always...
If you as a candidate do not define yourself, the world will define you for you. Yeah.
She lost the election when she picked I'm with her.
Yep.
Because that says that she, you know, it isn't about you, it's about her.
Yep. Right.
Trump said, I'm not with her, I'm with you.
Right.
And he became the blue-collar billionaire.
He even, as an extra special dig, you know, last night, you know, Hillary called to congratulate us. It's about all of us, you know. I mean, it is. He keeps talking about how it's a movement, and so people feel included in this.
Advocacy, man. I mean, when you are their advocate and you are what stands between them and the people trying to exploit them, you're going to win.
And you look at Gary Johnson, you know, he endorsed 150-200 candidates in 2012. Those candidates then busted their butt. They posted the photo. They put it on their materials. They handed out materials for them. You got their contact info so you could send them more yard signs and materials. You know, they felt included in your campaign. They had some skin in the game. And this time, he didn't do that. He didn't have a central message.
Worst advice ever.
He didn't have central policies. Name Hillary's policies. Name Gary Johnson's policies. You can't. I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to repeal Obamacare, because he just kept saying it over and over and over.
He got endorsed. I mean, that's the thing, is they tried to run it like it was an old-fashioned traditional election.
Yep.
And like he got more newspaper endorsements than Donald Trump by a large margin.
Yeah.
That didn't matter. None of it did.
Donald Trump had like five. Two. He had two quasi-major newspapers. Gary had six, mm-hmm. I think. Six or seven.
And then a whole bunch of libertarian blogs.
Right. And, you know, the problem, Gary, is that Donald Trump made us all feel included in his movement. Gary Johnson was running a campaign for the media and the Washington establishment.
Hi, I'm Gary.
And Hillary Clinton was not running a movement until today, when she was like, I'm your champion, women. And you know what? I'm sitting there and I'm watching it with my coworker. She's 23, 24. She's admittedly knows she doesn't know anything, but she is a liberal, and she's, you know... So we argue, and I teach her a lot of things, but I watch it with her, and she's just like, wow, that's the first time I've ever felt anything for Hillary Clinton. I really, like, she's a champion of women. I'm like, okay. I'm
thinking about, heard of Monica Lewinsky?
I'm thinking of Saudi Arabia, but like she felt that.
Yeah.
You know, had Hillary Clinton made it about women from the very beginning, or you know, or emoted like she wanted to cry today. Cry, Hillary, cry. That will make you likable. Like, and I get that she comes from an environment, you know, where Humans of New York posted the photo with her, and it was the first time I've ever had a human emotion, a human empathy towards Hillary Clinton, where she's talking about, I came up in law school where if you showed emotion, you were weak, and I had to cut it all off, and I had to be strong and tough.
And her formative years were very much a white male-dominated world, and that world doesn't exist like it used to. Right. Women earn the majority of college degrees now.
Right. I would, as a pretty emotional guy, would be endeared to Hillary Clinton if she... You know, that's why I love Obama. Like, I think Obama is... That clip's going to be used against me if I ever run for office. You know, I love Obama as a person because he just seems fun. And right now, I love Carefree Obama. He's just doing whatever he wants to do. He's enjoying the last days of his job at senior year. You know, and he just seems like a person. That's why I like Joe Biden. He seems like a person. George Bush seems like a person.
If there were ever a... I mean, that to me, Joe Biden was the pick.
Yep.
Joe Biden, that was the misread. Bernie would have won.
Yep.
But Joe Biden would have won in such a stunning fashion, it would have crushed the Republican Party for a while. But it was her turn.
Yep.
And they don't ever tell the Clintons no, despite they're done. Their political access is over. They're irrelevant going forward. And really, it's Barack Obama, but then the new age Democrats are Martin O'Malley, the Castro brothers. You're going to see some young, exciting Democrats that are right now in more local level positions that are starting to be or state level that are going to be groomed
up
nationally.
What happens with the DNC now, though? Do you think there's going to be huge outrage?
Obama takes it over.
Oh, they're going to be millennial.
Yeah,
and Cory Booker might, you know, depending on what he wants to do, if he's going to stay in the Senate or not. But someone like a Cory Booker or someone like actually David Plouffe would be perfect. He was Barack Obama's, you know,
campaign manager.
Yeah, because he was the one that said, when he did an interview early on, he said, the only candidate I wouldn't want to go against is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because you're going blind.
Right.
And you know he'll do anything.
Yep. Yeah.
He will not pull a single punch and feel a bit bad about it. And he's like, you can't prepare for that.
Right.
And he nailed it immediately and probably would have won her the election had she picked him rather than a spirit cooking Podesta.
Yeah.
Hey, no.
I mean,
it's just art.
Mm-hmm. At some point, you got to put some people out to pasture.
That guy's
been around too long, and he just is too ingrained and too much in his own echo chamber. He built his own echo chamber with the CAP. What is it?
The Citizens for American Progress?
Yeah. And lives in this different world and just is totally out of touch with how we all live.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, they don't leave New York or L.A. They're coastal, you know, dwellers, and they don't coastal or they go to Europe.
Right. And so, you know, Democrats love to suck up to unions, but unions totally abandoned them this time.
Oh, well, they sold them under the bus.
Hispanics,
this was their revenge.
Hispanics didn't turn out. Blacks didn't turn out.
Hispanics came out 2% more for Trump than Romney. Yep.
This is totally anecdotal. But I go out to my car to grab the Trump hat to do some Larry videos. So Larry, if you want to see some new Larry videos, go check out my YouTube, Chris Spangle, the Trump supporter. He's a patriot. He launched a blog today. He's very excited about Mr. Trump winning. So he's in the hospital. The excitement flared up his fibromyalgias, and so he'll be with you tomorrow with a video. But what was I talking about? So I'm walking back to my car, and I run into a black lady, probably about 30. She's probably about my age. And so I had the Trump hat on, and she goes, "Who won?" And I go, "Well, nobody." It was like 9 o'clock. It's like, I don't know. Nobody really knows, but it looks like Trump might pull it out. And she went off. And she totally surprised me because I thought, oh, she'll rant about Trump. She goes, "These are the two most crooked politicians that I have ever seen in my life. Donald Trump is just a bigot. He hates black people. He's going to put us all back. Blah, 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 blah." Standard stuff that you think a Democrat would say about him. And she goes, "And Hillary, she's even worse. She should be put in jail. She is the worst politician ever. She is a crook. She is a criminal. I know plenty of criminals, and she is a criminal. That is a quote. And I started laughing. She goes, it's true. And I said, so
it literally is. It's in the WikiLeaks emails.
I go, so who did you vote for? And she got a sheepish grin and kind of smile, and she said, well, listen, I can't vote for Trump because he's a racist. So I voted for Hillary, but I hated it. I didn't want to do it. And none of my friends went and voted. And I was just like, you know, I racially profiled. I expected her to yell at me about Trump and then be pro-Hillary. She wasn't. And
no one in this entire election was pro-Hillary.
Nobody. And it just goes back to the Black Jeopardy thing. I saw Michael Shea. He's the Weekend Update guy for SNL, and he had to have had a hand writing that bit. If you see Michael Shea in your area, go see him. He's so funny. And the Black Jeopardy bit with Tom Hanks, where Black people and Trump voters have a lot of similarities. And Harry Dedave is like, I don't mind Trump. He doesn't trust the government either. You know, it's like, so
Harry liked Trump early on.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because we did an episode where he was supposed to be anti.
Right.
And then it was the three of us versus you, and you were just apoplectic.
I was so pissed. I was like, Harry, never leave a man behind.
Harry, surely you, Harry, wink, wink.
Some local stand-up comedian, guy I really like, Joe Fitzpatrick, he got into it because I was very obnoxious today on social media. My liberal friends, especially my little open mic comedian liberal Bernie supporter bros, were so mad at me, and he kind of went after me. And he was like, tell that to your Black friends. So I just tagged Harry with an arrow pointing up. And Harry's like, I don't trust the government. And he's all paid up on his racism insurance. All right, so final thoughts on the Clintons.
Final thoughts on the Clintons. It is so
hopefully
good.
Hopefully we'll never talk about him again.
And now, I mean, now that they're out, the Clinton Global Initiative has no access.
Right.
Think about that.
That's
the whole House of Cards
money
collapses.
Gone.
Luckily, yep. They made $153 million, $156 million dollars in speeches. Yeah. So, you know, I wonder if they'll use, now there's no way they'll use any of their personal wealth to satisfy the debt obligations that they inevitably have by closing out a campaign. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be wonderful for them both to finally be gone.
Yeah.
Because they are the ultimate perpetuators of corruption in Washington, D.C.
Yep. You think they'll just go to an island somewhere and kick back?
No, I think
so. Just a. I see what you're doing.
I see what you're doing.
What kind of island are we talking about?
Have a nice little pizza party and
I don't know, maybe one with a, you know,
Haitian with extra cheese.
I know. I'll get a hot dog with no bun.
Yeah, no.
A wiener stand, huh?
No, I mean, I do. You have to think about it. Trump did promise that there will be a special investigation of Hillary Clinton if he wins.
Yeah.
There's an angry mob that's going to want that.
Yeah.
The question is, if he does, it's a political trade-off because he has limited, he didn't win the popular vote. So he has, and it wasn't necessarily a mandate, or it doesn't look to be electoral college-wise yet until those results are finalized. But the thing is, he has limited political capital. Your first 100 days are when you get the majority of your work done. If he goes the route of that, he will get nothing done with the Democrats in the Senate and House from the rest of his 4 years. And that is going to drive him crazy because he's a person that really will compromise a long way in order to just get things done.
I think he'll push that to the side and let, if there's still investigations
going
on. Well,
he needs to appoint Giuliani and let him handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll.
Because Christie's toxic because of the Bridgegate scandal, and apparently he's doing a kick-ass job on the transition.
Really?
Oh, him and Jeff Sessions apparently are blowing it out of the water.
Well, they need to.
I mean, those are two great people to have because Christie gets people in line and Sessions knows everybody.
I heard Ron Paul is going to be Secretary of the Treasury.
Honestly, he has never said a negative word about Ron Paul.
No.
He's only talked negatively about Rand once Rand attacked
him. Can you imagine if Doom Paul gets in with the God Emperor?
It would go a long way for a lot of people to have Ron involved.
But he's too old. Yeah,
he can't hear anymore.
He's done.
He's too busy selling water filters.
So Barack Obama tied his legacy. He's always tying his legacy to an election. He did it. You know, my progress is on the ballot. You've got to vote for me. And then now it's my legacy is on the ballot. And apparently people rejected your legacy in overwhelming numbers. I mean, it's a pretty.
They did 2 years into his election. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Tea Party Revolution stopped all plans he had immediately.
Sure. The only thing that united the Republican Party was anti-Obama. So it is a pretty stunning defeat, I think, not just of Obama, but liberalism and the idea of a bigger government altogether. If you really look at the coattails that Trump had and going in and just sweeping the House, the Senate, the presidency, you know, almost
changing
the governor's
states. He rewrote the industrial Midwest,
mm-hmm.
which is I really thought what he would end up doing because it was the election of the white non-college male.
He has completely, thank God, obliterated the red-blue map.
Yep. And I mean, at the end of the day, though, this Romney was the last election where I thought there was a chance where the old-fashioned model of Ohio and Florida and Virginia, but then never getting any of the blue-collar Democrat states was ever going to be a functioning model. I thought there were only two paths forward. Someone like a Trump, who's more communitarian, who's going to be more actually centrist or center-left, but then more culturally conservative as well. Or it's going to be a Western strategy from here on in for the GOP with a libertarian strain. But
right.
those votes just aren't there yet in mass right. numbers, so it doesn't make sense for this election.
And I'll tell you, the if you look at the millennial vote, it is every state was blue.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Kentucky. It was all blue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so. You know, they're social justice warrior millennial victim generation. You know, that's what I love, because I was telling last night in chat, you know, this election for me wasn't so much about Trump the person. Is it was about how do we still view ourselves?
Right.
Is that are we now a European social style democratic socialist country where we are victims and we're sort of complacent and we're just going to ride this thing out till it can't go on any longer? Or is it something where we still want to earn a living, we just want a fair shake?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it was a great sign that so many people still turned out for the first time to go and vote because they just want the chance to work,
mm-hmm.
but compete yeah. on a fair playing field against global competitors.
I think one of the reasons that so many people took this election so hard is that it's the first time a lot of people have been really engaged in the process. And, you know, for me, it's fun and I love it. And I was driving home today and I was just like, God, I'm jonesing. I'm jonesing. I'm sitting last night. You didn't come, so you wouldn't know, Greg.
Well, I was celebrating.
I didn't either.
Well, part of it for me, too, is I knew I was going to be Debbie Downer because I thought Gary would get 3.25.
Uh-huh.
And then I also knew that Donald Trump was going to win, and I didn't want people to tell me why he was the Antichrist.
No, it was none of that. We had the best time. We barely talked about any of it. But so we're sitting there all getting the returns, nerding out, looking through numbers, finding the good stories for our candidates, and just chit-chatting and eating food and all that. And like I'm just sitting here today going, man, I really got to wait two more years for that. You know, it's just so much fun. Politics is so fun, and being engaged is fun, and talking about it. And it's like yesterday was the Super Bowl for me. You know,
this was the greatest election of our lifetime.
You'll never see anything. It was a circus.
I get why the Cubs are popular now. I get why you guys like sports, because then you can have that every week.
Right.
I only get it once every three. I get it three.
It's a team atmosphere. Team atmospheres are fun.
Right.
You know, because, and that's what the libertarian, I'm so glad it was that kind of thing,
yeah.
because that isn't always the case. You know, yeah. it isn't always where we're there and we're not so much worried about the outcome. You know, we're tracking it, but we're not obsessing over it. And we're just out to have a good time and get to know each other.
That's how it is wherever I go. Maximum mandatory fun.
Maximum mandatory fun. Right.
You will have fun.
Dicks
or you
out
will
for Harambe, who got 11,000 yep. votes.
Right. And so I think people just have so much emotion still. They have so much emotion around this. And you just need to take the emotion out of the politics and just realize this is business. This is transactional. This is not, we're not all going to die. You don't need to unfriend people. You don't need to tell Aunt Donna that she can't come to Thanksgiving because she voted for Trump.
That's going
to
happen.
Calm down. Which is ridiculous.
Oh, I can't wait.
I had a friend that I was reading to you, a mental health professional.
Yeah.
That was just had lost her mind today and defriended 21 people. And she was like, I'm just not, you know, apparently I'm the kind of person that just should not be on social media.
Do people
should
forget,
end up shutting down her profile.
Do people forget they can shut off? You can walk away from it?
No, should not have access. They should not have to shut off.
I got unfriended by like seven people. Yeah, and Kat Anagnos, she was just parroting some of it. Go check some of that out. Some funny satirical writing. All right, final thoughts on Obama's legacy.
He's going to be way more influential post-presidency than he was
absolutely.
During his presidency yeah. because he is a good guy and he is an extremely sharp guy.
And a good organizer.
He is. It's funny, though. He is, he is just so high-minded, and he is, his discussions and his thought process is so up in the cloud rather than down on the ground. I see him being someone that's just an absolute rock star as a commentator, but more so, like, you know, he'll give the speech, you know, do the speeches, but it will be people actually want him to come, whether with Hillary. She basically held you hostage for a $200,000 speaking fee, and you you were going to pay.
I almost, I thought yesterday or the day before when I was listening to him speak, the night before the election, actually, I thought, man, is it a mistake having him campaign because he's so good at it?
He should have.
He's shitting on her,
and he makes her look horrible.
Yeah. Oh, at the convention, every speaker blew it out of the water, and then she hit. You know, she barely, you know, eked out a single.
Right.
You know, she almost got thrown out trying to get to first base, and all of them hit walk-off grand slams. And I was like, I would never want to follow that. Barack Obama just gave one of the best speeches of his lifetime. You know, his line that Americans don't look to be, you know, we don't look to be ruled. I mean, he just blew it out of the park, where Democrats, who would usually not agree with that, were in tears.
Right. All right. So let's move on to the GOP. For a party that was, you know, has really spent 8 years in the wilderness, where the only thing that was, they were doing autopsies on the party. The only thing that united them was hatred of Obama. The party is dead. The Republicans are dead. You know, we were saying a month and a half ago that this is the end of the GOP as we know it. Well, gosh darn, today we're looking at it, and Paul Ryan and Donald Trump are getting along. They're working together. They're going to...
It's because Trump had coattails for Paul Ryan in Wisconsin.
Well, and I'll tell you what, Mike Pence is going to be one of the most important players in Washington, D.C. now, because Mike Pence, and I've always thought this, even though I think very little of his intelligence and his policies, he is... he's a great speaker, and he's one of the few people in the Republican Party on the national stage that can unite the Trump wing, the Tea Party, the Reagan conservatives,
the neocons.
He can go to the Weekly Standard, to Reason,
conservative Democrats,
to National Review, to, you know, Right Side Broadcasting, and can get consensus among all these different groups. And he's going to be incredibly important to Trump now that he's president. Because he will help navigate, and you know,
he'll be Biden.
Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan both really sing the praises of Mike Pence as somebody who has helped smooth out a lot of the rough edges and those relationships. So, you know, the Republican Party is now resurgent, and when you have an election where you are given a mandate, and I would say Trump has a mandate,
even though he lost the general.
Yes, absolutely, because he has such a commanding lead in so many surprising states. They have the Senate. They have the 2016 version of a mandate. We're never going back to 1964 or 1972 or 1984. We're never going back to those days, at least not in the near future.
No.
But
there's too many leftists that need to be physically removed and separated from the social order.
Helicopter rides. The only thing free in this administration.
The internet is de-homogenizing politics and political theory and creating many, many, many different coalitions of politics. But the Republican Party, is it back?
No, this is it's not back. No. You know, sort of what I saw happening is that, For my opinion, I thought Trump was the only one that could win the candidacy. He could win it, or possibly a Kasich Rubio ticket could win it, going the old-fashioned model.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the GOP's future's west.
Right.
That hasn't changed, because Donald Trump is the only Donald Trump.
Sure.
Just because he was able to pull this off and rewrite the map for this election, and he, you know, when he seeks re-election, if he follows through on his trade and protection of American workers and creating a fair playing field, he'll be rewarded for that. But after that, there is no governing philosophy going forward. And then Lindsey Graham and John McCain types will be gone. Jeff Sessions will probably, you know, walk away. Bob Corker is another one that would probably be Secretary of State. So you're going to have the old guard gone. That leaves the Liberty Caucus only.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only young guy among that old guard of the GOP, the neocon hawkish guard, is Tom Cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Cotton has no friends. All his friends are going to be leaving. And that leaves a party ripe for redefinition. Especially since the last 8 years were the absence of one.
I would say that Todd Young entering the Senate from Indiana is Tom Cotton-like. He's Tom Cotton Light, actually.
He'll do whatever you tell him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, he can be, you know, he is whatever room, you know, the guy becomes right. whatever room he walks into.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, that's fine, because that's good, because you need someone that can build coalitions like a Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at who has a governing philosophy after post-Trump in the Republican Party, it's the Liberty Caucus and that only.
Right.
And Justin Amash will only grow in influence. Ted Cruz is going to be the head of NASA, the NASA committee. Thomas Massie just dominated. Rand Paul crushed it, just blew it out of the water in Kentucky.
In Kentucky, the state house
went
Republican for the first time since the 20s.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they are a hotbed of libertarianism in the Republican Party. And to me, what I really think is going to end up happening is that the Republican Party will, one, realize that they can't recreate Trump, because the Ohio, Florida model in Virginia, North Carolina is dead.
That
means that you have to go west, and that means you have to win Colorado, Utah, Nevada.
You're going to have to be socially liberal.
Right, yeah. And then you're going to have to be more pro-Hispanic.
Right.
And so that means they're going to have to cater to that strain, and that means that Ted Cruz will play a role, and Marco Rubio will play a role,
mm-hmm.
and Raul Labrador. You'll see these people need be absolutely essential in order to maintain strongholds in Texas and Arizona.
Right.
And so the future of the Republican Party, whether they want it to be or not, has to be west.
Do you think that, because I've been thinking lately, especially as, see, I love debate season in politics, because you spend a year or more in your mind and in your plan demonizing your opponents, even as a libertarian, and hating everything about them, picking them apart, trying to find ways to stop them. And then you come to debate season and you are face to face with them and you have to talk with them. And I had to talk with my counterparts, and you walk away going, you know what?
I like those guys.
John Gregg and Mike Pence isn't that bad of a guy. And you know what? That Trevor Foudy, he's been working 12-hour days like I've been working. You know, he's been, you realize, oh, we're peers. We're
Warner
not enemies.
And Neil, like two great right. guys.
Yeah. So, you know, and I've walked away from this season. This season broke my fever of anti-Republicanism in a lot of ways. I'm not saying that I would join the Republican Party. I'm not saying that I would, you know, I voted for Republicans, Democrats, and Libertarians, just like I have in every cycle. But I do see merit in your argument that we now have to think coalitionally. And the Libertarian Party and the Republican Party has to end its hostility with each other. And we have to have fluidity amongst its members. Listen, if you are a Republican Liberty Caucus person that loves Rand Paul, why would we as the Libertarian Party get bent out of shape about that? If you're a Republican Liberty Caucus member, or, you know, you're a Libertarian Republican, why would you be a dick to the Libertarian Party people? We need to work together, and we have to find that common ground, and not necessarily pool resources because that's not legal, but at least have dialogue and kind of break down that, because the Libertarian Party people, especially, they want to be a real political party, and so they have to, in order to raise themselves up, tear the other two down. And you don't need to do that. You just be you.
Yeah, no, I mean, just, It isn't us versus them. Yes, the Republican Party's bigger, so it's going to have philosophical diversity. There are going to be people that make your skin crawl, like Tom Cotton. There are also going to be great guys like Thomas Massie and Justin Amash and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz to an extent. And, you know, if you look at how it develops, like you looked at that millennial map, that's what's been on my mind for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
There's no beating that, especially if the opposition's divided.
Right.
If the opposition comes together and we start getting out ahead of this thing, and we start showing that we, because the Democrats are going to really hold on to the last vestiges of the old guard, because they're going to have that luxury. The Republican Party is going to have no such luxury.
Yeah.
This is it. Trump is the final nail in the coffin for the old model of Ohio, Virginia, and Florida.
Right.
From here on in, it's West, and it's only West, and it's rugged individualism and libertarianism.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if we're going to do that, we have to get millennials right now to be more libertarian and sympathetic and get them to like Amash, Massie, Rand Paul, rather than saying, well, these guys are impure and tearing them down so the outside observer won't give them a look.
Yeah.
Instead, look at Gary. But, like, you know, when I was looking at the electoral map, the Kasich, Rubio, or Trump, or the other option was to go Rand Paul, Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
That brings in, because Rand Paul was beating Clinton in Iowa, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, and then Florida, and he would have still won the traditionally the Southern Bible Belt. And that would have given you the election, too. Those were the only two models forward electorally. Mm-hmm. And that's only going to keep being the case going forward. And libertarians, at a certain point, if we take from the Liberty Caucus, they're going to want to add us. Yeah. Like, if you look at like startups, a lot of companies are started up in Silicon Valley with the intention to be acquired and then play a vital role in setting the future of the company when maybe their value wasn't justified to do that.
Right.
With the Libertarian Party, I see it getting to something where we end up getting to 10%, 15% nationally, and then the Republicans are stuck kind of at 30% with the Liberty Caucus because they suffer from voter enthusiasm because their last blue-haired old people won't be excited about Rand Paul and Amash.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Democrats just keep kicking ass with 51, 48, over and over and over, taking the Trump voters. And so then it becomes, are we tired of losing?
Sure.
Are we tired of losing every election? Let the libertarians dictate policy. You give us your vessel and get people voting. Do what you guys do in the arena of politics, and let's start winning some elections.
Yeah,
and that's what I see happening.
The Lens doctrine.
Well, I mean, that's just the inevitable future I kind of see formulating.
So, was this through Greg's lens?
Yes.
God damn it!
Well, you like that?
I don't like puns.
Yeah, you do.
Puns, no. All right, so. Everybody was predicting open civil war, but then the tone today was super conciliatory, and I really, like, it is amazing how one night can completely change everything. The attitude today amongst everybody in the Republican Party seems to be, enough fucking around, let's get this done. Let's work together, let's achieve common goals, let's put all the bygones, let bygones be you know.
The stakes could not be higher.
Right.
Because he's a newbie who yep. doesn't know what he's doing, with a press that is more rabid and an angry left, and you know the intelligentsia and the academic crowd, you know the Wizards of Smart, they are so anti-Trump. It's unlike anything that's ever happened.
To me, there has always been a sense that at some point the grown-ups in the room will stand up and take control of this, and that has not happened at all electorally. But now it feels like all right.
Well, yeah.
He's going to have to reach out to the grown-ups and go, help.
Well, yeah, I mean, so Sessions will probably be Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Corker ends up being Secretary of State. Attorney General's Giuliani. And then you have the finance chair, the 17-year lifer at Goldman Sachs, ends up being Secretary of the Treasury, like Munchin or something like that, mm-hmm. M-N-U-C-H-I-N. And then... You know, after that, he's even talked about trying to get John Bolton, you know, former ambassador.
No.
Like, see, those are the ones yeah. he needs to not use yeah. or else it becomes, you know, the tail wags the dog.
Yeah.
And so he's going to have to be reliant. Like, Sessions is good because he's meek-mannered and doesn't right. have a big profile. But, you know, Trump can't have a single misstep or this thing all falls apart before he gets anything done.
Yeah. So what do you think a libertarian's attitude should be towards Donald Trump?
I think you should look at the how he got elected, the sentiment of the people voting, that they're fed up with the government, is what I would look at.
But the problem is that libertarians do have principles, and
they have that luxury.
Populist anger, right? But I mean, what do you two do as Trump supporters the first time Trump introduces a plan that is anti-libertarian?
Anything restrictive on free speech. I would just lose my mind and be really upset.
Yeah.
Anything on foreign policy, he stuck his neck out by being the non-interventionist candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything where he goes to groups, you know, troops on the ground, I'd be really upset. But, you know, with Vladimir Putin coming out and saying that they will restore full diplomatic ties with the United States and President Trump,
and that
was a huge sign to me
yeah.
that we're going to start massive troop drawdowns in the Middle East and let them be that area of the globe's leader.
The interview that I had with Heather from Moscow, you know, she was like, they were all scared to death that Hillary Clinton was going to win because every single one of them, they all know that she is the hawk candidate and he is not. He wants peace, and
She does not. And
he
so,
can't, yeah.
So that's why she said people in Russia breathed, her friends all breathed an enormous sigh of relief because she's not president, because it would mean war with Russia. People in Russia, she said, were convinced that if Hillary Clinton were president, we would go to war.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
with Russia.
We probably wouldn't end up going to a war that way. It would end up being fought through proxies, like is being fought in the Middle East right now, in order to position and control pipelines so you can squeeze Europe through one side or another.
Right.
But at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton is a neocon raised in the Brookings Institute, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. They still look at the world as you have to control the supply of energy. And as long as you control that, you dictate your future. And if you don't control that, you're subject to the whims of everyone else.
Right.
You know, they don't realize that there's, it can be pluralistic. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the single dominant world player, and the risk of losing that, despite crippling yourself economically, it isn't worth that.
Sure.
You know, Vladimir Putin really, as far, he wants to be the sole provider of energy to Europe and China. And China's growing, and they're creating a new Silk Road. But there's no stopping that.
Yeah.
Outside of a huge financial crisis that kind of looks like it could happen right now, but they'll step in with any measures to prevent societal unrest since they're a communist country. That's really probably not a long-term option. And so we keep stoking, you know, Hillary Clinton would have forced the South China Sea issue with Japan and China, and that would have turned into Russia and China versus the United States and Japan. And that we can't fight a war.
No.
We can't afford a war, and the last two we fought ended up making things worse, and all we have is the debt remaining. And so he's doing us a favor by taking the lead in Syria. Yes, Bashar al-Assad is a war criminal, and he gassed his own people, and he is a terrible individual in order to maintain power. He is better than letting Jabhat al-Nusra or ISIS take over and be the grow the caliphate and convince young men that the United States is the white devil.
All right, so the future of the DNC, who takes over the... I see Barack Obama being the de facto head of the DNC moving forward.
I think he needs some time. Like, I think he's going to want a little bit of time to step away.
I think that's always the case, but, you know, I blame a lot of the... Which isn't... This isn't a bad thing, because obviously we're at a point where we're going to drain the swamp, right, Tyler?
Drain the swamp.
So, when a president steps away, they become the de facto head of the party. Bill Clinton loved and relished that role and controlled the Democratic Party up until last night. And shared kind of that power with Barack Obama, which is sort of unprecedented. But when Bush left, Bush stepped away from all of it and left the entire Bush machine just rot out in the field. And so you had chaos these last 8 years. And so he is a lot of the reason that there is this kind of... I just don't see Barack Obama doing that. I think that Barack Obama has some lofty goals, whereas Bush just wanted to go be left alone at his ranch. I see Barack Obama's future as being, racial issues and also getting rid of nuclear weapons around the world. That's something that he's always been passionate about, and campaigning for Democrats. So I see him being sort of the de facto head of the DNC moving forward.
I could see him. He won't be the head of it, obviously.
Right.
But, I think David Plouffe's the perfect pick.
Right.
I think David Plouffe, you put him in charge of the DNC, and it's young, cool. He is, he's so impressive.
Sure.
And then, I think they need to start grooming. I mean, the future of the country on the left is Bernie Sanders, and the future of the country on the right is Rand Paul.
Right.
That's the inevitable discussion America's going to have, and that's the clash. And so the sooner that the DNC starts positioning itself rather than center-left to socialist democracy, the better it is for them, because that model would have actually won in this election over Donald Trump.
Right.
Bernie would have beat him, because Trump's message would have been less effective than Bernie's labor protections.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would have ended up going for him.
Yeah.
And so, if the DNC is going to be serious, they have to let the Clintons go in that center-left triangulation position in American politics, sort of like Jim Webb, and start the rebranding as the millennial socialist democracy state.
Sure.
And then he could do that with David Plouffe. He could do that with Jill Stein, could play a role. I mean, there are a lot of really interesting people that are sort of marginalized and on the fringe that they could create, like with Cory Booker on the Black Lives Matter issues. the Raul Castro on immigration, let them be the opposition to Trump in the closed border model. I mean, just a really a whole lot of opportunities to be the young, cool party with Barack Obama being the leader and figurehead who's already young and cool.
Yeah. So the Libertarian Party, the future looks really good for the Libertarian Party. I mean, there's ballot access in a lot of new states, and there's a generational split that I think is happening. It's not even ideological anymore. You know, you had the radicals, but I think we're now the radicals versus the pragmatists, etc. I think we're now heading to a period where you've got a lot of millennials versus the boomer older Gen Xers. And the older boomer Gen Xers who have been around in the party for a long time have been focused on purity and philosophy. And the millennials within the Libertarian Party are much more elections focused and are much more about business. I'm one of those people. I'm here to win. I'm not here to have a debate club. I'm here to win elections. I'm here to build political power for libertarians so that we can then give political power to our people, which want to leave everybody alone. Because I don't trust Democrats and Republicans with power. I want us to have it. So I think a lot of the younger generation think like I do. They want to win elections and they want to do the things that will build power and coalitions so that we can be a force in American politics. So I do see that there is a generational shift in our party, just like there is in the other two parties, but especially the Republican Party. We mirror that party in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So moving forward, I think that's going to be a split. I would just say, as far as chairmen go, Ryan Priebus of the Republican Party did the impossible over these last 4 years. He is well liked, it seems like, by pretty much everyone, and kept the Republican Party focused and won the presidency with Donald Trump, who had zero campaign staff. He used the Republican Party's grassroots to win, which is sort of unprecedented because usually it's not the party. A party is a ballot access mechanism and a fundraising tool and a data keeper.
Mm-hmm.
That's the function of a political party. It is not to win elections for a singular candidate.
No, parties are used to identify, organize, and educate.
Yep. And so Ryan Priebus, I think, did a really good job with the Republican Party and kept Donald Trump's favor, which is damn hard through that primary. And likewise, I'd give Nick Starwalk a big shout out. He's the chairman of the Libertarian Party. I think Nick did a really good job in the same way that Ryan Priebus did. He seemed to be well liked by all the candidates except Austin. And Nick did a good job of just killing it on media appearances. He just did an appearance on Pastors Without Answers, which is part of the Bad Christian Podcast Network. Shout out to those guys. I love that podcast. I think it's spot on if you're a Christian. You know, they didn't try to convert him on Pastors With No Answers. But yeah.
To be fair, his people did kill their Lord and Savior.
So, no, Nick did a great job of doing a lot of media appearances, and he's just, when we look towards the future, Nick seems to have a lot of the right ideas, and he also has a lot of respect for Greg and I, which is the most important thing that a chairman can have in a political party.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, is Nick Starwalk is the most impressive head of a political party in the United States.
Yeah.
He's more impressive than Ryan Priebus because he comes off as more informed. He comes off as a less the politician, sort of trying to evade and come up with right. You know, the vanilla answer. And his opposition in the Democrat Party was Wasserman Schultz, and then Donna Brazile was temporary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who it is right now.
It won't. Yeah.
But you know, he will still be the most impressive, especially within the media, head of a political party in the United States.
Yeah. All right, so finally, let's wrap up with the future, a recap in the future with the media. The media, they really got spanked, didn't they? They really got everything wrong, didn't they?
They did. I mean, the media, though, is MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS are people that came from the 1992 Clinton, the Democratic Clinton administration and communications department. So, I mean, they all, they were, that's the old guard in the American media. and they're zoned out now. I mean, they don't have access. This is unprecedented.
Yeah.
The Clinton Global Initiative has no political access or power. The media has no access or power.
Right.
Fox News has like two anchors that have access and power, Hannity and maybe Brett Baier.
Yeah.
I
saw Roger Stone on Alex Jones today.
He's all of a sudden relevant nationally.
I'm sitting there watching Alex Jones today to see like what he would say, and Alex Jones called for the execution of Hillary Clinton. He called white women crazy. Actually, let's play this clip from Alex Jones. This was him on his show today.
And again, I'm not singling out white women. It's just that tends to be the group that's the most insane.
He's so funny.
Can you deny it?
No. And somebody on our Instagram, when I posted that, goes, I mean, is he wrong?
They delivered Donald Trump the win.
They
white
sure
women
did, yeah.
Voters are the reason Trump won. Yep.
By 53%?
Mm-hmm.
So
it proves they're crazy.
So they just love a bad boy. You know that, Tad.
Yeah.
So the
hater blockers.
The media has no access. Alex Jones, all of a sudden, I posed this question on Twitter. What does Alex Jones do now that his people are in power? It's Roger Stone sitting there, one of Trump's main advisors on Alex Jones. But you're not going to see him on CNN, are you?
No, I mean, and Roger Stone hasn't been relevant for a long time.
Right.
Paul Manafort wasn't relevant since Reagan.
Right.
It's interesting. It is a ragtag cast of misfits, and who are these people? Even the guy that was the former Bannon.
Steve
Bannon is a media guy that had never run a political campaign.
Right.
You know, these guys are going to be. I mean, who's Trump going to tab as his chief of staff?
Twitter.
Kellyanne, do you tab Kellyanne Conway?
I've heard Reince Priebus as his chief of staff.
Well, I mean, Trump wants him as head of the RNC.
Oh.
To be the whisperer and the go-between. I mean, if I'm looking at it, I say, who do you... The one that naturally comes to me is Ivanka or Don Jr.
Yeah.
But you can't really have a family member.
Right.
And someone's got to run the company.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a $1 billion company to maintain and run and leverage... There's going to be some real issues, though, about licensing a last name of the President of the United States.
This speaks to something that I've maintained all along. So I was watching, I think it was maybe Charlie Rose or C-SPAN, and they had on Mark Leibovich, who wrote This Town, Citizens of the Green Room, all great books, a New York Times Magazine reporter. And he talked about being embedded for a week last September, not of, of September of 2015 with Trump. It was September, October. And he basically got the impression that this was a lark. You know, like he had talked about it and he figured he'd give it a shot, but he wasn't taking it too seriously. And there's multiple reports from many people. The New York Times has reported it as well that...
Failing New York Times.
He had multiple... at multiple points, had exit points. You know, if certain things didn't happen, then he would just quit and go back to his life. And he's publicly said that. And so I get the feeling that nobody is more surprised that Donald Trump will be president than Donald Trump is.
I don't know, because there was also a meeting held with Newt Gingrich and Rudy Giuliani where he laid out how he was going to manipulate the media for free news coverage and run a non-traditional campaign with
sure.
a bunch of the best minds in the Republican Party.
But that doesn't mean that you know that's going to work. Now, at a certain point in any campaign, even if you're running a libertarian campaign, you're like, there's no way I'm not going to win.
Right.
You know?
But Trump is the kind of person that would plan an exit. Rather than just...
Oh, yeah, he's going to hedge his bets.
Right.
Sure.
Like, you know, this is where it would... this is the most I'm going to let my name ID be run down. And so if it gets to the point where I'm becoming marginalized and not important, I got to get out before I let my my name get to that point. Because my name is my business.
Yeah.
I license a luxury lifestyle brand. I cannot afford for that brand to get tarnished.
Sure.
That is the business.
Right.
You know, there are rumors that when he released his financials, like Goodwill... is the actual value you're allowed to put onto your financial statements for like what you personally value the asset of your brand at, just the name. The rumor is that Trump's is $6 billion, which makes sense because the company has no debt because all he does is license his last name.
Sure.
And so it's just cash flow.
Yeah.
With no risk.
Makes total sense.
But he can't afford for that brand to be damaged at all, or else the whole $6 billion evaporates overnight.
So John King on CNN today, and there, I hope this is the last time I ever have to see Wolf Blitzer. And that's a quick aside. But this was a statement by John King on the show today, and he finally got it.
That is, that's one of the many lessons to be learned. Number one, this town is clearly out of touch, and that includes the media and the political establishment, out of touch with America. Washington is not America.
You think? So Washington is not America. They finally get that they are irrelevant. I mean, that is the thing that I thought.
They're commentators for a group of people they don't know.
I am watching, we watched ABC last night because we wanted to watch He Who Shall Not Be Named on Channel 6. We'll get to that later. and so we watched ABC's coverage. And I'll tell you what, you're looking at the panel and the conservatives are Cokie Roberts, Matthew Dowd, and Bill Kristol. Which one of the, I mean, CNN, at least they try, they have Jeffrey Lord, and they have, like, some blonde girl who screams about how much she loves Trump. They at least try, you know what I mean? Like, they have representatives of all different opinions. But ABC, their conservatives are Bill Kristol, Matthew Dowd, who hasn't been relevant in Republican politics in 10 years.
Him and Ed Gillespie just kept losing.
Right.
You know, that was the whole point. Him, Karl Rove, and Ed Gillespie just literally kept losing hundreds of millions of dollars trying to win, you know, primaries and win House seats.
And Cokie Roberts,
who hasn't been relevant since Reagan.
Right. So it's fascinating. And so when the New York Times, about 9:15, when the New York Times, and we were watching The Upshot last night, their data service, and, you know, it was like, Clinton had a 60-80% chance of winning. Trump was all the way down here. And then that started to converge. And then it got to 50% around 9 o'clock. And I said to the room that we were in, I said, guys, the New York Times says this is 50-50 now. And the room went quiet when I said that. And at the same time, on ABC, they called North Carolina. And they go, George Stephanopoulos goes, we have breaking news. Donald Trump has won North Carolina. Like that, morose as anything, and a hush, a shudder goes through the entire room.
There's nothing more satisfying than watching those self-righteous pricks. See, they're supposed to be the commentary class and the people that are in touch with American society to be firing blind.
You couldn't. I then got what you were saying. It was good.
There is nothing more enjoyable as someone, a child of the right, than to watch the fear, devastation, heartbreak, and mortification of someone on the left. Like, Trump to me is just God. I mean, he's left. He's really a labor he's union a, Democrat. Yeah. He's Jim Webb. Yeah. But at the end of the day, he strikes fear into the heart of every, you know, tea-sipping chai latte neckbeard that I just want to go around hitting in the teeth and laughing.
You know,
but I'm a libertarian.
And I look at it and I watch these Sunday panels and I watch these shows and I'm like, why are Greg and I not doing this? We're so much better at this than they are. And I get jealous, but then I realize, I'm like, you know what? We are already that. Like the thing that I wrote.
We have Tad Western.
Yeah.
His, hell yeah.
Tad Western.
Yeah, he literally is like Madonna. He has a moniker.
I'm sitting there going, okay, I wrote an article that's on WeirdLibertarians.com, Why Trump Won. I got 400 shares or something crazy. Oh, I got 200, 300, 400 shares on Facebook. There are more people that read what I wrote on Facebook last night then watch Cokie Roberts on a Sunday morning.
Oh yeah, or like read David, read David Brooks' right. new book. You know, that Social Animal or whatever that sold like 6,000 copies. Like 400 shares probably means that you got the equivalent same amount of reads as his new book release.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the existential crisis that is happening in the media that I consume. Anyways, I don't go to Breitbart. You know, like to get my alt-right news, I go to Alex Jones because it's hilarious. I think it's so funny. I listen to Glenn Beck. I listen to all the Sunday shows. I love all the nerd podcasts from like Politico, New York Times, Ezra Klein and Vox, Huffington Post. I listen to all those, you know, and like Alex Jones is pouring champagne.
He's your reality TV.
Glenn Beck is crying and asking for, you know, and then, you know, the New York Times run-up podcast. Well, I guess I just don't know how he won. Yeah,
the old media, I think they've been seeing the downturn in all their media, TV, newspapers, radio. All that's been on a downturn. But now this has really hit them hard.
Mm-hmm.
They blame...
Because Trump cut him out.
That's what Reagan did.
Yeah. Cut him out. No access. Nothing. Then they go off, predict everything wrong. The only people who were predicting were the alternate media.
Yeah.
The websites.
Trafalgar
podcast.
Polling. Yeah. And who was the other one? Oh, the LA Times poll and IBD.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Bowel syndrome?
No, their big mistake. All the polls really only made, they all made the same mistake. Is that they were using a weighted Democrat turnout, or they used 8 to 9% more Democrats in their poll rather than 4 to 5, which was a strategic mistake from the beginning, because if you could tell you they didn't pay attention to Trump and didn't take time doing the research because they never considered him serious. And the reason you can tell that is if they had looked at his primary results, you would have seen that 30% of his voters were first-time Republican registering people, and another 4% were first-time ever voters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if they had recognized that trend, they would have adjusted their weighting of their polling, and they would actually be able to go sell a service in a non-election year and stay in business, because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Nate Silver's, why would you even have him on? All he does is predict things wrong. He's like a weatherman. You know?
Yeah, but that's why you need weird libertarians. You've heard about ISIS and a Trump win here. You haven't heard that anywhere
Nate
else.
Nate Silver will always have a job predicting coin flips at the Super Bowl, though.
All right, so let's start wrapping up. Let's go give our final thoughts before we all lose our voice. Tad Western, your final thoughts on the 2016 campaign.
America's great already.
The sun was shining today.
It was a beautiful day.
Liberals were crying.
The birds were chirping.
It's so great, isn't it?
The butt hurt was overflowing.
It was so good.
Oh. I haven't even checked Facebook. I can't.
You know,
I'd probably pass out.
It's
laughter.
So good. Oh, we should talk about the stolen votes with Gary before we go. We'll wedge this in between in the final thoughts here. Here's my argument for the wasted vote thing with Gary Johnson. I don't care. Hillary Clinton sucks. Run a better candidate. Donald Trump isn't worse than Hillary Clinton. They're both horrible candidates that suck. And it's my vote. And if you don't think it's my vote and you think it's your vote, then you're a smug asshole. And you can have my vote crammed right up your ass.
This is another thing the press is missing, is that your vote belongs to the Libertarian Party. They don't see the Libertarian Party as a political party.
Sure.
And so they don't realize that your vote, you're voting, they don't realize the size of it. That you're voting for a political party. It's not that you're one of those independent undecideds trying to choose between a false binary.
Right.
You're showing up on election day to support your dues-paying member of that political party.
The base in Indiana Libertarian politics has gone from 2 to 4% in 2 years. It is now 4%. There wasn't a candidate other than one candidate. I mean, every candidate. The Senate candidate, the presidential candidate, all the township boarded, all the state house candidate, all 4%. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the basement now.
That's the size of the Libertarian vote and Libertarian Party expected turnout.
It was 1% 8 years ago. It's now 4%. So it's growing, and so it's, and I know that doesn't sound impressive if you're a Republican listening, but that's a big deal. You know how hard it is to start a movement? So yeah, Greg's right. They don't respect us, and who cares? Like, we used to care that they didn't respect us, but a guy who's totally disrespected just won the presidency. If you care about your values and you care about your principles and you care about what you believe in, go win.
If they're nice to you and they, are inclusive and they speak highly of you, and I really, there are things I like about you and I really appreciate the hard work you're putting in, they don't consider you a threat.
Right.
Which means you're irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
The second you're a threat.
Yeah, I know. Jeff Vibbert's trying to FaceTime us, but we're trying to podcast here.
But, the second you become a threat, it all stops.
Right.
Gary Johnson was, he's the Libertarian. He's like Bernie, 70%. What? Hillary lost by XYZ. That covered the spread.
Get him.
He's Hitler.
Right.
He wants to take old people, put them on an ice floe, and literally push and watch them drown.
It's because they want access. You look at the WikiLeaks. They're planning questions and debates with the NBC reporter, Dan Harmon. Or not Dan Harmon. That's the community guy. But anyways, whatever his name was, he's irrelevant. They're planning questions with Wolf Blitzer. And you know, they're sending questions to Jake Tapper. There's no evidence he used them because Jake Tapper's perfect. You know,
shill.
So...
Shillery.
I will shill for Tap Tap my as long
you
as I
got the hots for Tap.
Do you like Anderson Weeper?
I do like Anderson Cooper.
He had a bad night.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Not as bad as Van Jones.
Oh, Van was out of control. He was so upset.
Yeah, he
was so upset. And I actually really like Van because I don't agree with him on politics, but he always has an interesting perspective that I've never thought of. And so
the blackmail.
Like, yeah, exactly right.
No, but I mean it's funny because you know I mean that sincerely. The reason it's interesting is because he's not the watered down acceptable black guy that is always on the media.
Right.
You know? Van Jones is from the community organizing, Saul Alinsky, hard left, bare bones, worked his way up the hard way.
Right.
You know, he didn't get where he is by being socially acceptable and changing his accent depending on the crowd of the room he was speaking to. And that's what I really like about Van Jones and respect about him. And that's why it was so devastating, because he was barely going to have access to the Clinton administration. He is virtually irrelevant politically. Yep. All of them are. Newt Gingrich is all of a sudden one of the most important commentators in America and going to be a great, great secretary of whatever department they put him in.
Tremendous.
He is smart.
Tremendous.
Newt is smart. And Bill Clinton's entire legacy and how well thought of he was for so long is entirely due to Newt Gingrich's willingness to moderate the Republican Party and meet him halfway a lot until he torched him for affairs.
Right. All right. Final thoughts, Greg, on the 2016 campaign.
Final thoughts.
We've said it all.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only thing is I can't wait for a Trump press conference because he won't take questions from reporters. He'll speak directly over the top of their head into the cameras, like Reagan did. He would just talk to the American people. He didn't need someone to interpret it in between.
Right.
I'm wanting bedtime stories. Nightly bedtime stories.
You want
tuck us in, Donald.
I'm your daddy now. I wonder if Alec Baldwin, like Alec was like, yeah, I'll do this for like 8 weeks. That'll be fine.
No, he's got a full-time gig now.
Now he's fucked. He's like, oh no, I got to do this every week. They'll go back to Daryl Hammond, but he has been great.
Oh, what was the thing we were going to talk about? Mentioned about Gary that we.
Oh, the wasted vote.
Yeah, the wasted vote.
Yeah, tell people to go fuck themselves.
Right.
Like honestly,
I'm a member of a political party that I voted for. Sue me.
Right. You there?
How? Why? You think I was going to vote for Hillary anyway?
Like, yeah. Just send them the smug liberal article from earlier. Like, you have a plan for my vote. That's you assuming my vote. Don't assume my vote, bro.
Yeah.
It's my vote.
You need to find more people to vote for your candidate.
Right. Yeah, you leave
you
me
dick.
Alone. Right.
And the other thing is that with everybody being suicidal and depressed and sitting there shell-shocked, crying, wondering when the deportation gangs are still going to start arriving and sending you back, accelerate the process.
Yeah.
Don't accommodate them. Don't go and turn it into a group therapy session.
It's going to be okay.
Start shit posting and shit post away until they either block you or they realize that they're being ridiculous.
Yes. We need just memes everywhere.
A full offensive on political correctness. That is the lesson of Donald Trump. This is a new era.
We'll be at a meme-induced Jonestown.
Yes.
That's honestly what we need. And there's muffins. Muffins.
A full-scale offensive.
We need
the
to...
Pepe offensive.
Yes.
Listen, society needs to be tougher. We are emotionally fragile as a society right now. It is ridiculous.
They used to fight civil... You know, the civil rights movement was designed to get black kids in school with white kids. Now, our movement of our time is to get the black kids out of the school with the white kids and give them a space where they don't have to acknowledge the whiteness of anyone.
I called a black guy a racist today.
You should have.
I had a very thoughtful post, and his girlfriend, you know, Caitlin, you know, a former pursuit of mine, Caitlin,
he called you. You got called out on that post,
and so you know, I was like, you know, hey, and that's actually probably what I'm going to close with. Thanks for reminding me. And she was like, you know, let's show this to our daughter. This is really thoughtful. And he's like, I ain't listening to no guy who's never had the struggle. Blah 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 blah. And I go, so you're judging a man on the color of his skin and not the words that he is speaking. I hope you don't teach racism to your daughter. And World War III erupted. It was hilarious.
Why?
Because I was being racist. And I said, no, you're being racist. It's the new America. It's great.
I love it.
It's so
I've been
good.
Waiting. This is, you know, it's been a year of hitspiration. And, you know, I feel like Donspiration's needed. I feel like I need to, you know, be the change you want to be in the world, or taking Hitler quotes and laying them over Trump's face. I feel like that's what America needs. We need to rustle the jimmies of American society to the point they lose them all.
Because you know what has happened is, as we've always had a group chat, but we introduced Tyler and Aaron and Amir and some other trolls into our life, and it found 4chan, and Greg and I used to sit there and go, I don't know, should we post that? That's kind of offensive. We don't want to ruffle any feathers. And now it's like, here's a Hitler meme.
You gotta break eggs to get an omelet, you know.
And we're more popular than we've ever been.
Well, yeah, because people, it was, you know, Trump is a representation of the silent majority who are sick to death of being told that white males and white society are the reasons for the ills of society. He was the huge right hook in the face of every social justice warrior, every multiculturalist perpetuator. You know, anyone that wanted you to go to sensitivity or diversity training or safe space, like,
yeah.
Trump is a right hook into their face, and then he just kind of stares over them, daring them to make a move.
Yeah.
You know, he's giving us headway for a little while. We've got a little window of 8 years, hopefully 8 years to 4 years of protection, where all of a sudden, when someone calls you a racist, you feel empowered to say, no, I'm not. You're the racist.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was, oh, I better not say anything or else... Yeah. I might be racist. Am I racist?
I don't want to be offensive.
Have I ever been to a David Duke website?
Everybody is so fragile. And you know what? It's the age of fragility is over.
It
and
is.
If we want to change that blue map and listen, the people that are arguing that you stole their vote, those people are never going to vote with you.
They probably never even voted in the first place.
Like, what I always do is, if somebody comes at me with hostility, I immediately just go right back at them with hostility and memes. And if somebody baits me, you know, with a clear, well, blah, 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 so what are you going to do about that? Then I will give them an honest, respectful answer. Because I know what they're going to do. They're going to follow it up with some more dumb baiting stuff. And I have given the people that will read the comments in my feed an answer, because those people who have the same question will read my answer and it will be thoughtful and they'll go, okay. Then when that person doubles down, now it's comedy time. It's time to troll back, because if you come to my house to troll, I'm going to troll you, and I'm way better at it. I do it professionally. I'm a professional meme maker. So, like, I'm going to win, and people will love it because you will be sad. And
I'll make you go to a level that you have no desire to go
to. So people end up, and then people end up loving it. We're getting ready to get to the holiday season, and when Greg and I return to our hometown, we will have so many people going, I love your memes.
My hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyler lives there now.
Stop by.
Yeah.
He's protecting it for us.
I'm the one with...
Hit him up at the Coachman.
He's in there in his fold-out chair with his Coleman cooler and some Bush Light. And he's got his hater shades on.
Him and Larry Good.
You will see me at the Coachman.
Uh-huh. All right. I'm going to follow up. I'm going to end this with my message. It sort of goes along with this. And, you know, I just saw so many breathless, what will I tell my daughter? What will I tell my children?
Those are great.
I know. Here's what you tell your children. This is the Chris Spangle guide to telling your... Now, I don't have children, so I'm going to mansplain this. I'm going to child-splain this to you.
Yes.
But this is what I would tell your kids. And this is at wearelibertarians.com if you want to copy and paste or share the link if you're a sweet human being. The candidates, they exhibited the best and worst in a society and politics and in all of us. So just teach them the good stuff. And in my opinion, modeling anxiety and fear just tells your kids that you are giving all of your power over to politicians. And that couldn't be further from what we ought to be doing. We should be taking this moment as a realization that we have the power and that Washington does not. So I would tell them that America used to be a mean place, and that people didn't think everyone had the same ability and chances that others had, but America became a better place. People in the past didn't think that women or people with different skin colors could vote. Now we have a black president, and we had a woman that nearly won last night.
And we have an orange one now.
She won, and we have an orange one. Helping your people.
Yeah.
Every person in our country can be successful if they work hard. Sometimes you may lose, but you get back up and you try again. You may lose again, but along the way you'll make a difference, and effort is never wasted. Not everyone will treat you fairly. It doesn't matter what others think of you as long as you love yourself and you have people around you that love and support you. People will disagree with you. Debating ideas are a good thing. If someone disagrees, you don't have to feel emotional about it. People can be wrong and still be good. The president says some things that aren't nice. Donald Trump is going to say some things that are embarrassing to all of us. And you shouldn't be like that, young Spangle. There will always be people around you that do or say things that aren't good, but you don't have to do what they do. You should be your own person. Teach them that character isn't tested when you're doing well. It's when things are hard that define whether you're a good person or a bad person. And most importantly, teach them to live by the golden rule. Teach them that the government is irrelevant, and teach them that taxation is theft. Thank you.
Praise Keck.
Yep.
Rest in peace, Harambe.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of We Are Libertarians. It's been a long one. This is going to be damn near a three-hour episode, but I think we went deep. We gave you a full dive.
We may not touch bottom, but we'll stretch out the edges.
Falls deep.
That's what she said. All right. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Again, people are really going to be paying attention, so please share this episode. Please go and share We Are Libertarians. Listen, if you tag us and ask people to follow, we'll follow you back. We'll be friends with you on Facebook or like your Twitter or like your Instagram, and we'll connect with each other. So please, if you share, tag us in it. Tag We Are Libertarians. We'd love to connect with our listeners. And thank you so much for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Hi. Yeah, it's me. It's Chris Spangle. You know, the funny thing about doing a podcast is that unless people talk with you on social media, you have no idea who's listening. You don't know who's listening. And you have no idea what the audience looks like. I'm guessing male, you know, young, white. But we don't know for sure. I'm sure you're all very good looking, though. But tell us a little bit more about yourself and about what you like or don't like about the show by going to wearelibertarians.com, scroll down to the bottom on the sidebar, and take our listener survey. It really helps us out. It helps us understand who you are and what you like. And then we ignore it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Greg ignores it because Greg's a dick. But I listen to it. I take everything you say very seriously. Again, so what we've learned is go to wearelibertarians.com, scroll down to the bottom, scroll down to the sidebar on the right, take the listener survey, I will read it, Greg will ignore it, Greg is a dick. All right, thank you for considering taking 2 minutes out of your day to make We Are Libertarians better. Greg is a dick. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at wearelibertarians.com.